And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. Oh, what a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, they know you.
Mm-hmm.
They know me.
Yep.
Extrasensory synchronicity. It's all about synchronicity tonight. And there's lots of it in the deep depths of this report, which goes in an interesting dive into the doppelganger, and not in a way that you're familiar with it generally, although there are aspects of that kind of double mirror image that come up quite a bit tonight. This is going to be a very deep exploration about secrets that are being revealed at this time in history that were set up as far back as the 19th century, going deep into the mystery school aspect and Rudolf Steiner's Ahriman. We have all that for you tonight, and it's something that really, you know, it spreads out over about a 200-year course and gives us a lot of background information on the things we're coming up against now, which is why it's so important, I think, to go back into Steiner's work, because what you're looking at is a real crystal ball into the 21st century and the forces that will be up against us. Of course, tonight we're going to be taking your questions as well in the second half of the program. We'll go a couple hours with you tonight, and Miss Olivia is going to be putting your questions together. You can ask those questions anytime. We have a big update on some of the things around the election as well, right in the opening, and I'm going to get into that with some very interesting comments by President Trump and the fact that this big major debate is coming up next week on the 27th. Oh, lovely CNN, the ultimate defenders of the establishment faith. But even they, I think, see Biden is in trouble. And so this is going to be interesting, regardless of how you slice it in that regard. And of course, the plans to jail Trump in New York, the sentencing set for July 11th, that's also a big fart. So if we get into, you know, Biden bottoming out in the debate, don't worry, they can always put Trump in jail on the 11th. And this is the nature of what we find ourselves up against in this particular period of time. And so you really can't get around the body politic right now. A lot of people have tried to come forward on the independent side and say, well, the presidential election really doesn't matter. I emphasize repeatedly how important this election is, and I cannot stress enough that if you don't stop the invasion of the southern border, you'll lose any idea of a republic. And this also fits in with a lot of news stories that we're seeing about this kind of mass criminality that's coming out of that. And it has nothing to do, you know, there's all kinds of things that are set up in relation to immigration in this country where people have a very good chance of coming here under normal circumstances. This other stuff is all engineered through the UN, and we'll touch upon that as well. But especially if you're new here, before we go any further, I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, and it keeps us in touch with each other through all the massive censorship that we're witnessing. And, you know, censorship is nothing new to what we do here, but the truth is it's been particularly acute as of late. And so, you know, literally takes 30 seconds to sign up, and it's a free newsletter, but we'll let you know about the remarkable documentaries coming up for you. There's a four-part Hacking Atlantis series that the first part has been put out there. It's right in this channel. It's free. Of course, in July, that will be on both Amazon and Hulu, available for, you know, a worldwide audience there. And that's one of a four-part documentary series coming up, along with events and great interviews that we have coming up for you this summer. So make sure that you stand up and be counted, and you're on that newsletter list. I also want to mention that, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people have been talking to me about this Harvard thing that came out in relation to crypto-terrestrials and why they're going in this direction of putting this on the record. One of the things I can tell you, I'll read from it because I actually have the article here, but One of the things I can tell you is at a certain point when they were doing the UFO threat activity, and we've seen a lot of the UFO threat obsters around in the news claiming that, oh, you know, they're under threat. And Elizondo has a book, you know, through Penguin Books coming out. And all of a sudden he's back around saying, I'm being threatened. First of all, you know, he's a former government employee. It's very easy if you're being threatened, you know, you go to the government or you go to officials and you present that information. So something weird going on there. But I've noticed it as a thread through all these different UFO researchers right now. And they're not the type of UFO researchers that you want to find the truth from. You know, they're usually affiliated with the CIA. So this sounds like more of this propaganda model and the marketing model that they've tried. And when they've stood up different elements that we've helped expose, like when Mellon was pushing the Grush thing and all that, and Elizondo and, you know, the whole thing that they did with TTSA, it is important to watch how that gets deflated and then reanimated over and over again with a seemingly no end game. So I think in furtherance of that, we're seeing a lot of this go on. So the Harvard study came out and said, well, there are all these crypto terrestrials. Now, anyone who knows the UFO field knows full well the MacTonys book. And it is definitely strange that MacTonys died very young age, I think 31, right after he wrote the book. That's just a fact of history. And who knows if it was related, but certainly when you get around the ex-Protect side of the UFO field, all sorts of strange things start to happen. And Tawney's seemed to me that there was something unusual going on there. I've thought that with a few different researchers in the past and in terms of, you know, how they died. And there's a long thread of that that starts in the 1940s, in fact. But I think it's important to note in Tawney's work that he said these crypto-terrestrials were a group that was here with us that were just a little more advanced than we were. So they had, you know, advanced aircraft, advanced tech, and they basically, you know, he had this whole thing about them underground and all that kind of thing. But he also said that they blended in with the society. So it was an odd theory, but he had some interesting points in it. Now we find ourselves about 20 years after all that, and Harvard is putting out this whole thing. And they promoted it in such a way, you know, we've had guys over there in like Albie Loeb's lab is just a few minutes from here. But he was pushing this whole idea about, you know, hey, these meteorites that are coming in, they're actually orbs, and they've been, you know, sent here as probes to check us out. So there was a whole AI from another planet meme that they were building up. They're just testing the grounds. And guys like Loeb, again, connected with intelligence, in this case, Israeli intelligence, and the whole Talpiot thing that he comes out of for 10 years. I mean, that's a while. So you get a lot of these guys who are at the forefront of the UFO thing, and they are sitting there with 10, 20, 30 years of intelligence experience. It's not good. So this is the actual article. I'll just read briefly from it. And it says, what if an unknown technological civilization is hiding right here on Earth, sheltering in bases deep underground and possibly even emerging with UFOs or disguised as everyday humans? In a new paper that's bound to raise eyebrows in the scientific community, and this is from Futurism, it says, bound to raise eyebrows, a team of researchers from Harvard and Montana Technical University.
Montana?
Yeah, here we go, Montana again. Mm-hmm. Speculates that the sightings of UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomena, bureaucracy speak for UFOs, may reflect activities of intelligent beings concealed in stealth here on Earth. Now, it's interesting, when they were pushing the UFO threat stuff, they had everybody really got interested in looking up, and other countries did too. Now, those countries, you know, we have a major secret space program, but the other countries have various secret activities up there too. And I think this started to kind of walk over each other, and they were like, oh, you know, our own threat meme is getting people to pay more attention to space. We don't want that. And we don't want the real thing out there. So they've started to now emphasize this, well, you know, actually it's underground, it's underwater, it's crypto, you know, so you can't really get to it. Just like when people talk a lot, when we get into Antarctica, there's two real interesting fields there. One, a very interesting detailed thread of people associated with Antarctica being associated with unusual things in our political process. And then the other one, which is just, you know, throw up anything you want because it's Antarctica, nobody can get there and study anything. So it's probably even harder to study Antarctica than it is space, in fact. So I literally think what happened with the whole Opster stuff coming from our friends in these intelligence agencies is they were like, I mean, too many people with the threat thing are, you know, telescopes, other countries are using their satellites for this. Maybe we've made them too interested in space. Let's get them looking underground. You know, they'll have no idea. So this is where they're going with it. And then they use Grush as part of this and the whole thing about a retrieval program and all that. And one of the things I challenged Grush on when I talked to him was coming on this show and facing tough questions. And the background on that is that he said that Christopher Mellon wouldn't let him do it. The former DOD billionaire official, who is the cousin of John Warner, who's a frequent guest on this program. And Warner has, you know, called out their whole UFO threat activity, being the son of Catherine Mellon. So it's interesting because the Mellons are in the news a lot right now because we have Timothy Mellon going deep here and giving the Trump candidacy $50 million. That's no small sum in a campaign this tight. But you know what's weird about Timothy Mellon is he is also the biggest supporter of the PAC supporting Bobby Kennedy. So that vote is very Splitsville, and this is part of the problem, you know. And as I've mentioned before, I like Bobby Kennedy as a candidate, but I also can see that the campaign didn't live up to some of the things that he was shooting for. So, you know, we have some people in the campaign who don't quite live up to what you would expect in a Kennedy campaign and the VP choice and all that stuff. And that's tough too, because I know a lot of good people support him and I think he has good ideas. And I think the whole mantra of wait for 28 would be the way to go, Bobby, on that. So, you know, it's been coming up a lot that they're keeping him out of the debates. And they, you know, used all these threshold things to keep him out. In the grand scheme of things, it's probably better to have Trump face off against Biden in any case, although I would like to see Bobby in at least one of those debates. But ultimately, I think the consolidation needs to be behind the Trump candidacy against the Biden presidency, because the Biden regime will destroy the country. There's no question destroying. About it. In fact, yes, they're already in process of. And, you know, we see those headlines every day, and I'm sure many of you out there know it. And it isn't a particular political bias or a partisan thing at this point. It's just literally you got to protect the country. And so I think it becomes more and more, you know, we're at a point where it's getting into July. There's only a few months to the election, in fact, three. So, you know, you have to start to get real about what's going to go down. And although the Bobby candidacy on the Democratic side sounded fantastic, once it went independent, it didn't have a lot of the same ideals. And the message, I think they searched for a message. They were just all over the place. A lot of the things he talks about are important, but they're splintered. And so, it's, you know, so many topics that you can't really have the public focus on it. And I would say the numbers at this point would show that Kennedy doesn't have any kind of a chance to get 270 electoral votes. No way. I can't. I mean, I don't really see him getting any. But I do think he's well positioned himself for 2028. The thing you don't want to do is alienate all of the Trump voters by, you know, acting in the role of a spoiler, as it were. And I think that they, you know, at this point, it's pretty well weighted out. You know, you could say even the run itself has been helpful and useful and educational for the public as well. So there's a lot of things going on there. Remember, whenever you get around Trump and you get around Kennedy, you're dealing with things in the background, like the assassination files, for example, like the UFO file. Those things are hard in the mix of it. And the problem is that a lot of the alternative media, when you get up on those higher echelons, they don't know much about the UFO file, and they use the JFK thing as kind of a buzz term. But we've done documentaries on it, and we've done presentations on it, and we have a kind of a potent thing that beats just headlines. And I think it's important on the audience side to really get with the potent aspects. I've stressed this over and over again. You see very lightweight versions of the same topics that we cover now because they pick up on different things when they scan the independent media. And I think it maybe is a good thing that so many of the independents, you know, the bigger people who've gone independent have raised these issues at least, but they're raising a very watered down version of them. And so, you know, the JFK thing is not just a weird buzz in the background for who shot JFK or whatever. It represents an entirely different government governance paradigm. And so, you know why there's a whole arc of deep state researchers and people who've spent 6 decades studying the thing, and they're still holding back records. There's a reason for that. It strikes to the very heart of the global leadership of who's running the world. And so it's very important, in my opinion, that we get to things in a potent, realistic fashion. Now, when you do that, you run the risk of alienating different sides and also asking your audience to think deeply. And what I think a lot of the people who run shows at that higher level, you know, the kind of Rogan type stuff, it's not that they have ill intentions. It's just that they dress things in a more superficial fashion. And so, but for me, it's important to get to the other direction. So that's what we're doing here. And tonight in particular, we're going to do it now. But before we do that, I am going to go to the Trump UFO mention, which I think is important because I think I've said enough about the Harvard study. Although I will say one last thing about astrophysicist Avi. He says, another explanation put forward by Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb suggests that other ancient civilizations may have lived on planets like Mars or Earth, but a billion years apart, and hence were not aware of each other. So, you know, what's happening is that academic world is trying to give you a watered down version of things that the independent world has studied for decades and come up with deep answers. And they want to kind of take all that interest that has developed and steer it and create a narrative that worked with an establishment narrative, possibly even creating a new religion that moves to space and gives them the ability to call themselves, you know, inheritors of some kind of like Mars civilization and sets them apart. So I think that they play with this. They don't know how it's going to play out in the public. They've been known to misfire before. And I think that's part of what they're afraid of here. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show deep, deep tonight on the Armonic Doppelganger mystery. This is Rudolf Steiner's Secret of Anthroposophy revealed through the deep mystery school knowledge that he held. Now, I'll wrap up the election side, and then we'll present the Steiner doppelganger info, and then we'll do your questions. So we'll do about 45 minutes presentation, about 45 minutes of your questions. How's
that? Sounds
great. All right, everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This one, X-Series 173. How are we doing up there?
Doing great.
What do you got?
Well, a lot of people have had their own doppelganger experiences, so I can't wait to hear more of that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Go ahead.
Wei Shower says, I have run into so many doppelgangers. One of them followed me to 3 different jobs. Another one in the drugstore looks so much like a friend of mine that I almost said, Bridget, is that you? But I realized right away what was going on, and I felt like I was witnessing a skip in the Matrix.
Interesting. I'll tell you this, which is, you have a couple of different things going on there. You have types, which is something they study in the Gurdjieff work. Probably the best. Once you get a handle around types, then you start to see there are similarities in certain types of people. It has nothing to do with race or gender or anything, but the types themselves. And supposedly, it relates to the zodiac, which is the same thing that Jesus was doing with the 12 disciples, that they each represented a major factor type for humanity. And so sometimes I think when we get into this whole thing about this person looked exactly like so-and-so, that it's a types thing. And it's interesting because they actually have the same crossover astrologically, astronomically, cosmically with the person in question. Other times when you see someone who's actually a spitting image of someone, then it goes into interesting territory. And I have a couple of stories around that tonight as well. It's interesting. Some of the sightings of doppelgangers are interesting. There's a superstition that, you know, you see the doppelganger, your own doppelganger, and it's a harbinger of some bad news, or, you know, people see it before they die. And that was a whole superstitious bit. I actually don't believe that at all. What I do see is, and this is the weirdest part of the reports, which is sometimes the doppelganger is seen doing things that you will be doing in the future. So, for example, you know, the doppelganger is working for some corporation that you'll end up working for. You know, the doppelganger is living in some city that you end up moving to. That I find particularly interesting. And I found an account of Goethe, who we know is a big inspiration around Steiner. And he's talking about seeing his doppelganger in this place. And he's on a horse and he sees someone who looks exactly like him, dressed like him and everything. And he realizes 8 years later, when he goes back there, he's moving there. And it was actually him, you know, somewhere off in the timeline, seeing himself. So sometimes the doppelganger in those cases is doing something way ahead of us, something we're going to do in the future. So he's kind of a predictor, or she is a predictor. And I know that there's a lot about the good versus evil with the doppelganger as well. We've seen a lot of that. And everyone knows that. It's something that's sort of deep in our own subconscious. There's a certain amount of truth to it. But then you wonder, wait a minute, you know, what if the person is kind of evil to start with? What happens then? That could very well be, I'm going to explain the doppelganger and the kind of foundational thought around it that Steiner gave us, which is a little different than some of the traditional fiction. But the idea is that the doppelganger is trying to subsume the life of the individual. So they're trying to kind of take it over. So, you know, if somebody was evil, then you say, well, if, you know, if they're good, they'll have an evil doppelganger and there's a balance of some kind. And so you get a lot of that, you know, with the good, it's like good Cooper and bad Cooper and Twin Peaks. And of course, good Kirk and bad Kirk and Star Trek and things like that, which I think actually are very good versions of it. Both shows very influenced by Rudolf Steiner, in fact, and the anthroposophical ideas are so thick in Twin Peaks that you could almost say the show should be, you know, brought to you by Rudolf Steiner's ideas. And that's a Mark Shaw thing. I know that they've hinted, oh, you know, there's some theosophy thrown in there, but in fact, there's so much Steiner in it. It is so deeply rooted. The terminology of the White Lodge and Black Lodge and a number of different things that they brought forward in that show. And the show did a very good job with it. That's the whole thing. They were very creative with it. And I'm sure that was inspired. However, it is interesting because Steiner over and over again as an influence has not really been given the kind of credence, I think, that he should have, which is phenomenal. But of course, we do it on this show. And I think we've brought some of these ideas. See, there are networks of anthroposophy, and there are the Waldorf schools, and there's all sorts of, you know, Christian community things around Steiner's work. So it's there are lots of people who are familiar with him. But on a broad basis, if you really think about it, it's not very well put out there. And maybe part of that is that it was a German movement which came over to America, and there was originally a translation thing, so they built up things. Some people aren't aware that Steiner created Campbell villages, which were some of the first camps, outdoor farms and things for dealing with people who were mentally challenged and things. So that's in the early 20th century, developing a whole kind of healing regimen around that. You know, Walita projects and all kinds of different things that have been done, Eurythmy, Of course, the Waldorf schools and biodynamic farming, which is huge. Of course, you see all the biodynamic wines now. Sting just bought up a huge farm with his wife in Italy, and they do biodynamic wines. I want to try some of those, except I don't drink. Now, what's interesting about that to me, though, is, you know, you can see it. It's there. It's like Steiner's impact and influence. What we've been able to do with this show is, with the X series, Steiner's an important lens to get you a glimpse of what the mystery schools are doing in relation to our modern period. Even though he died in 1925, he was looking so far ahead. And he was also saying, look, you know, here we are in the 1920s or whatever, but most of what you see happening and what will roll out into the future was all decided on in 1840. Those are the types of things that made me wonder about Steiner, who I'd read for years, literally since I was a kid. What I got was that Steiner was giving us the background on the mystery traditions in such a way that when I was looking at other incredible inspirational work, like the Casey work or Gurdjieff's work and these various things, Golden Dawn, I was starting to see a whole tapestry of the mystery information entering into the public, them trying different ways to do this, move the culture without just coming in with this huge, you know, movement like a new Christian church or something. This was a little different. This was introducing seeds of ideas and building them up. And then, you know, the people go away, you know, like Krishnamurti and people like that go away. Gurdjieff goes away and there's some kind of an organization left, but it's not, you know, it doesn't have an institutional quality. And I would say that with a number of these, you start to see these links in the background. But Steiner in particular seems to be, with his harmonic work, giving us a glimpse of the 21st century and the challenges that we are creating. Now, remember, one of the things that Steiner said was that he felt that the mystery schools were failing in 1915. When they were in the middle of World War One, and he said, well, you know, even the anthroposophy, I've taken out of theosophy and created my own anthroposophy. Even that is failing. But by the time he got to 1920, he said, I've seen it now in about 100 years, all of this is going to have another chance. And that's what we're seeing, the doors opening again for the mystery schools, the anthroposophic knowledge, and the kind of spiritual silent science. So that's where we find ourselves now. The question is, what happens when we take up this opportunity? And we're seeing with the work of this program and others that the Steiner word is starting to get out. But what was it? What was it that Steiner was getting at? One of the things I've put on the record is that I feel that Rudolf Steiner, who founded anthroposophy for four decades in the public, was trying to just give us information about Ahriman. That's all that it is about, everything that's associated with it, all the different pieces. He was trying to give us an awareness of Ahriman so that when it came in, people would have some ability to resist it and to, you know, see it for what it was, which is this huge technological force coming through and into the culture through the advances on the scientific side. That is the scientific materialism, which is so dangerous that some in the mystery schools had said in that 19th century time, we're going to have to let some of these secrets out because within 100 years, we're not going to recognize humanity. They're going to be absorbed into the machine. And so we got things in culture. You know, you got information about life after death. You got things about telepathy, you know, psychic experience, remote viewing, which the government took up. Reincarnation, which is very important from the standpoint of the mystery schools, but was frowned upon by the popular religions of the period. All of these things, you know, a holistic health wave, which you can see how important that is with the advent of all the, you know, invented viruses and things and the various ops that they run by the pharmaceutical companies. So this stuff is very, very pertinent to the environment and the place we find ourselves in. So when we see that what we're looking at is a period of time where this information becomes not only educational and beneficial, but it's possible, it's so life-changing in a period like this that possibilities for a kind of evolution on the spiritual side are just off the charts. By the same token, the oppression of the technology and the period that we're in lends us into the possibility that humanity could go away from its spiritual evolutionary course. This is the nature of the danger, and that's why the Ahriman information is so important. What is Ahriman exactly? That's the question that we're going to answer with some of Steiner's own words, and it's always good to go to the horse's mouth. As you know, that's the section that we're heading into now. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 173, Ahrimanic Doppelganger Mystery School Steiner Secret Revealed. We're going to be taking your questions in part two of this, which we'll get to in about a half hour or so. In the meantime, Miss Olivia, what are you up
There's just great stories already. D. Dorothy Papineau says, I bumped into a woman who swore she had spent the evening talking to me in a bar I never go into. Also, I saw an Italian lady with her daughters who looked like an older version of me. She even had the same birthmark on her upper lip I have. Mm. She looked at me like she'd seen a ghost.
Interesting. You know, there's someone who was... One of the original doppelganger stories comes from who was a part of the royal house in Italy. And he went into a restaurant and the owner of the restaurant had actually, had a very similar background, had gone to a similar school. And they had actually even dated the same woman. And everywhere along the line, they found all these things in common. And so there is something when you get into the doppelganger, it's like you get into the idea of people living on multiple levels, as it were. Let's start with this. Steiner and Ahriman. So Steiner's giving us, we've done a number of shows on Ahriman and the Eighth Sphere. So that information is there in any of the X-Series episodes dealing with Steiner. However, I think this comes more and more into focus with the doppelganger info. But fundamentally, Steiner is saying, oh, you know, what we regard as the devil is actually kind of a mixed piece. It's actually that you have forces that are luciferic and forces that are Ahrimanic. And to make things even more complicated, in the middle of it is a Soret character. So, but these are demonic forces that are challenges to humanity and have their own idea and want to create their own evolutionary track outside of our normal spiritual evolutionary track. Now, ordinarily, humanity would evolve spiritually, and in Steiner's cosmology, you create a new Jupiter, with a lot of steps along the way. In the new revamped version of our evolutionary track, Ahriman and these Ahrimanic forces, which are very much the terror that we see in society now, and people worrying about, you know, cloned body parts and machines running everything and satellites running your life. That's all Ahrimanic. And the whole biometric identity system, you know, that type of levels of tyranny and control is pure Ahrimanic control directly out of the Steiner work. So what Steiner basically was looking at, he said, look, you know, here's this force that's attached itself to humanity during a vulnerable period back in the antediluvian world. And it has attached itself to the evolution of the earth and humanity. And so he portrays it as an astral force with many parts. Now, I think the term demon is thrown around a lot when it comes to, and this is part of the kind of flimsy nature of the reporting around AI and things like that. And I think this is something that needs to be gotten away from. But the whole idea of like, hey, demons are coming through AI, you know, demon this, demon that. But people don't understand what they're talking about. And this is part of the problem when we throw that out there. The question of fact is, what are these forces that we're talking about? The Ahriman study gives us a window to study these things from a perspective of understanding how it's not just a superstition. but it's an actual force that's alive in our world today. And this is part of the challenge of it. And that really Steiner's spiritual science is to bring us into a higher awareness around these things. The awareness gets choked off in different phases. You know, we did an episode a few weeks ago on Mesmer. And Mesmer was all about the magnetic energy and the healing involved. But it also involved a deeper study of what humanity was all about and how each person was a magnet and had these different abilities. And certain people had more magnetic fluid than others and could do certain things like healings. And so the original thing that happened with Mesmer was that, you know, he became all the rage, and then the medical authorities in France were going out of business. And they're like, we have to get this guy. And they put together a commission, and they threw Ben Franklin on it, of all people. And we went into this whole thing about how they basically drove Mesmer out. And mesmerism took off and became all these different things. But you see what happens when humanity gets just a handle on some of this. And remember, it's Blavatsky who said, what was the mystery schools in Germany who had set him up and, you know, given him this information and then turned him loose in Europe to see what would happen. The schools that hold the information and how they're able to do it without being detected goes back to a story that Gurdjieff tells, which I think is really important and fundamental. What he says is that the what to do is always available in the public. And so the what to do in a religious tradition, for example, love your neighbor, you know, turn the other cheek and all these kinds of things. But the how to do it is a series of methods and attunement exercises that is not in general circulation, because whenever the how to do it is out there, it gets persecuted by these different power centers. So that goes underground and becomes this sort of network of different schools. And that's, you know, fundamentally some kind of an understanding of what the mystery schools are. So those methods and the understandings are held by different groups. And the, you know, the groups go all around the world, whether it's Asia or Europe or America. And unfortunately, side by side with the groups that want to move the culture forward on the mystery side, are also groups that are dedicated to this domination of the Ahrimanic eighth sphere, which has a different purpose, a different future in mind for humanity. That's what we're looking at here in the 21st century. And that's why this information around Ahriman is so important, and why Steiner needs to be kind of understood in a different light and reassessed in this sense as a very important figure who brought this out far, far ahead of his time. And what is the message that we're looking at? I'm going to read a few quotes which will kind of give us an idea of how early this happened and how America is really the focal point for this doppelganger piece. And that becomes an important understanding for us as well, that America is right at the heart of it. It is the zone where the doppelganger works at its best. And so that's the danger here, because the doppelganger is out of control. And there's a reason for that. And Steiner gives us a geographical reason. That's what we're going to get into next. Before I do, Miss Olivia, how are you doing out there?
Good. Peter Rabbit says, do NPCs have doppelgangers? And Song of Prayer says, I hope we can talk about Steiner's comments on, quote, people who are not really human, unquote.
Well, I think the NPCs and the not human thing have a lot in common there. I think of those more as kind of like vacant, you know, and I think that there are kind of black holes that show up in the humanity. And
if they don't have individuality, though, wouldn't it be easier
as vehicles?
If to copy an actual person that does exist, that they would look like someone who does.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than have their own individuality.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're talking there about replacements, which is maybe interesting as a side line on this as well. But I would say for sure, let's go into the American information around this. Now, here's something that might be hard to take for people who study traditional history. Which is that the Christopher Columbus discovering America in 1492 across the ocean blue is just, you know, a complete fabrication. this is when they were ready to announce it. Now, there's lots of information out there regarding the Templars reaching here first. I think that fundamentally, anyone who's done the research can tell, you know, the Templars reached here, Eric the Red, they found things of his in Minnesota. In the Casey readings, there's a whole thing about Viking colonies going back and forth into America way, way before Columbus. Steiner is also in that same track, and he's saying there's a reason for it. Some people suspected that they were doing gold mining here a long, long time before Columbus came, and so the Europeans were going back and forth doing that. What's interesting is Steiner puts an interesting twist on it right away and says, you know what? It's the doppelganger that they were studying here because they knew it was so powerful that they studied the native tribes who were in the thralls of this doppelganger. Now, what's interesting is he gives a geographic signature to the doppelganger. And he's also suggesting that the doppelganger is born with a person right when they start in life. The doppelganger is right there with them, and it's with them through every experience of life as a kind of etheric double, which is the name that theosophy would give it later.
What's the purpose of it?
Well, it's an outline and an imprint of the individual, and it's not so much that it's positive necessarily, but it's one of those things that you have to have, you know, in order to get through Earth. This other thing is going to be there with you. And what it is that Steiner is giving us information about with the doppelganger is that when it has, a human soul can go through this incarnation and then move on positively, but the doppelganger is collecting its own information off of that lifetime. And what happens is it tries to get the upper hand and overtake the individual. And this is the kind of battle that we see going on in individuals over time. In America, oddly enough, in certain places, because of its geographical magnetic setup, it's ideal for the doppelganger to overtake the individual. I found that interesting. In reading Steiner's work, but there are other places also where the doppelganger's ability. Now, what's also interesting is when you get into America, you also have the ability of not being so drowsy on a psychic level. That is, the psychic activity is heightened. So you're given kind of both heightened psychic awareness and the ability of the doppelganger to have more power over an individual. Very dynamic environment, you could say, as Steiner describes it. The other piece that I think is interesting is what he highlighted about Russia really opens up the door on this. I'll go back to America, but what he says about Russia is that it has such an impression in the culture from the cosmos that the way that the influences from the cosmos stream into the Russian culture, that they're naturally more psychic, naturally more spiritual. And the way that he described it literally were cosmic influences coming in to the soil and then bouncing back out to the cosmos. America, energetically, the way he's describing it, was doing something a little bit different, which is powerful magnetic currents from deep inside the Earth were setting off all these influences into the cosmos. And that the as a result of that back and forth, that's where you get this kind of unusual magnetic situation, not seen anywhere else, according to him. Let's read a little bit about why. And a lot of these are excerpts from something called The Karma of Untruthfulness, which is a series of lectures that Steiner gave. This one in particular is from 1917. And so he's talking about how the mystery schools guided our awareness, for better or for worse, when it came to the discovery of America. The course of events was guided from a well-instructed and honorable source in such a way that all voyages to America, which had formerly been made from northern lands, like Norway, were brought to an end. Whereas in earlier times, ships had sailed from America to Norway for certain purposes. And he says, I will say more on this. I wonder if he did. It was gradually arranged that America should be forgotten and the connection lost. Now, he's talking there about 700 AD to 900 AD in that period, and that there's all this activity between Norway and America. And what they're doing is they're studying the impact of this doppelganger that's happening on the native cultures. And they're measuring things like illness. They're measuring psychic capabilities. They're measuring physical illness and psychological issues. By the 15th century, indeed, the peoples of Europe knew nothing of America, especially from Rome, was this change brought about because European humanity had to be shielded from American influences. A leading part in it was played by Irish monks who, as Irish initiates, were engaged in the Christianizing of Europe. This is interesting, too. Steiner goes very far back, and just a little snapshot of cosmic history is he talks about very early on in the Garden of Eden period that a mirror image of paradise had to be created in order for Lucifer to enter the actual paradise. So the whole Adam and Eve story and all the rest of it. And what he's saying is that Ireland was set up as an actual mirror image of paradise, and it still had this kind of unusual impact. So he cites a lot about the geography there as well as being basically of a magic nature. Now, what he talks about next is very interesting. So he says, you know, only when the fifth post-Atlantean epoch was begun was America actually discovered, in quotes, as history says. But as you know very well, much of the history taught in schools is fable convenu, which is a fable agreed upon. And one of these fables is that America was discovered for the first time in 1492. In fact, it was only rediscovered. That connection had been blotted out for a period as destiny required. But we must know the truth of these historical circumstances and how it was that Europe was hedged in and carefully sheltered from certain influences which were not to come in. Now, those are harmonic influences which were especially active in America. And the idea was if we can get enough of Europe kind of Christianized, and we'll build a wall of kind of cosmic significance against this. This is literally the way that he's putting it across. However, there's a battle there early on with the mystery schools, and some of them want to bring this Ahriman force in because there are schools of Ahriman influence. And so you have a clash in all of the mystery traditions, which is why it becomes very difficult. You know, someone had mentioned to me in an email about a show that I'd done on the mystery schools. We've done so many shows as the foundation of the mystery schools on this program. And they are, in my opinion, largely dedicated to moving the culture forward. And, you know, what's referred to as the Great White Brotherhood, with no racial connotation, but just from a spiritual perspective, in all of these different traditions is the very highest, you know, or like Buddha and Christ and all of these forces come out of this allegiance. And, you know, the school of the mysteries, the school of the prophets. And it's interesting because they said, well, you know, I always thought the mystery schools were evil. And it's a weird thing out there that we regard anything that is kind of out there, not well understood, and where groups work in secret and all the rest, as nefarious. Well, it's not actually the case. There's a number of groups that work for the benefit of humanity, and there's a number of groups that work against it. It's the same clash, except that's the war that we don't see, that's invisible. The reason it's so important now is it seems like we've entered into a period where everything is at stake in terms of the future of humanity. And that's where we find ourselves in the precipice of nuclear engagements, you know, in the erasing of gender roles, in the biometric civilization and the totalitarian control of a digital system. That is exactly our clue that this is the period that's being referred to. And that's the next piece of what we're going to track here, which is where does that doppelganger fit in to all this? Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show deep tonight on Anthroposophy and the work of Rudolf Steiner with X-Series 173, The Ahriman Doppelganger Mystery, Steiner's Secret Revealed. I mentioned we're going to take your questions, which we will in the second half tonight. So it's about 20 minutes from now. And then also, while I have your attention, if you're new here, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter, which keeps us in touch and all the fantastic things that we have coming up for you. Amazing X-Series episodes, interviews, documentaries, a new documentary series, Hacking Atlantis. First episode is available for free right on this channel. An incredible 90-minute overview on the hot zone and the craze in the hot zone down there in the Bimini, Bahamas, Cuba area, and all the Atlantean secrets that it holds. We've seen a lot of very deep geopolitics going on there, as a matter of fact. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Joseph Tuka says, sounds like CGI, a mirror of paradise, but it's dead. And Auntie Queenie says, mirror image to enter. That's very Alice Through the Looking Glass.
That's really true. Well, it is. Remember that what we get from the highest Eastern wisdom traditions is this concept of Maya, that everything on earth is Maya and all of it is provided for humanity as a developmental path. And so, you know, all the things that we see, all the things that dazzle us, and people do incredible things because they're under the influence of this illusion of Maya. So coming face to face with that mirror image of the real thing and the reflection of the real thing is something that humanity, you know, has had to sort out. It's just the same way in trying to determine if someone is lying to you about something that you have to deal with on a daily basis, whether you're buying a car or hiring an employee. There's a number of different factors that come into play whenever you're dealing with that human interaction. But it is so very important, I think, in the period that we're in, to see things clearly. And, you know, there have been periods where humanity has been through tremendous things like World War II, and the great challenges have brought out the best in them. And I think part of the problem, just as an aside here, is that humanity has been lulled into a certain kind of a state, and it's been given false, civil rights, activities and things to identify with. So when you go from a genuine movement, say that they had in the civil rights movement in the 50s and the 60s, to the types of things that they have now, you know, trying to say, well, you know, we should have civil rights for 9-year-olds to choose their gender and things like that. That's the kind of insanity that they're placing into the culture to see, will these people go for it? Can we control them on that level? And so it's where this awareness and this pushback becomes very essential for humanity. And also, I think that there's a big test going on in these schools. And I think that that's another thing that comes up in the heart of all this. One thing I wanted to kind of stop and take a snapshot of the period that we're talking about in the 19th century is about spiritualism and how the mystery schools were trying to bring this in this particular period as the lead up to theosophy, and how all these things from what was generally a religiously repressed culture, you know, you couldn't talk even, you know, 100 or 200 years previous to the 19th century about a number of the things that came up. And earlier than that, you would have been, you know, burned at the stake. I mean, that's just the nature of humanity's track at that point. What I think is important is when you get into this period that Steiner focuses so heavily on, 1840 to 1879, he talks about two remarkable things that take place. One, in 1840, the push, the Ahrimanic possession of science towards scientific materialism, and the mystery schools realizing, aha, you know, humanity is going to be split off from their spiritual centers. And then 1879, what he calls the war in heaven, where these dark forces get booted out of what we would call heaven and become very active on earth. This is like earth is their last stand. You know, the eighth sphere becomes the final stand. So these things, although they deal with the cosmology of things, become really the heart of how we understand what we're going through now. And so if we go back into that period, it's interesting because we have the Fox sisters. And the Fox sisters are the ones who bring in the whole seance piece. And, you know, we're talking around 1848 in this period, just previous to Lincoln's presidency in the Civil War. And what happens is this information gets released through the phenomena that takes place. And so psychic activity becomes more realized. So remember, just previously, we had Mesmer and all that, and Mesmer's driven out, and they try to knock out all the people who were into Mesmer and Swedenborg and all the rest. And by the time you get to 1850, this other thing starts to explode in America. And the Fox sisters are particularly interesting because all three of them have psychic ability, and they're able to act as mediums. And it becomes very obvious to those people in upstate New York that the phenomena around them is legit. And as a matter of fact, there are a lot of attempts to break down what's happening with them. You know, how are they conjuring up these spirits? And the spirits will communicate in different ways that people can see. And we hear all about things like table rapping and all the rest of it. And that becomes Ouija boards and all the rest later. But they are a very interesting experiment directly by the schools. And the idea is humanity needs to be aware of these other elemental forces as a prelude to seeing their real interaction with other intelligences here. So this is a big jump from where they were because, you know, they were living under this kind of very religiously controlled state of mind on the establishment side, or in a very kind of, you know, whatever you do, whatever you can to get by fashion. It's interesting with the Fox sisters because the reaction to them, nobody knows what to make of them. They're highly psychic and they become a phenomena, and they set off a phenomena of spiritualism in America and in the UK, Australia, and other places. And the original groups that are behind them, the mystery schools that are behind them, what they're trying to achieve is that knowledge on humanity's side, that you're working with other spirits. Now, supposedly, it got misinterpreted as just dealing with those who have passed beyond, and something went wrong in this period, and the mystery schools pulled back their support around this. And what's interesting is now what they try to do in traditional, you know, whenever they look back on the Fox sisters, they always try to say, oh, you know, they were hoaxers who were doing this stuff to a naive audience and all the rest of it. There's no question that after they came about, you know, just like we have phony things like Gaia TV and all the people who peddle things and all that. But the core of the psychic information that they brought forward was completely legit. As a matter of fact, in the first few months when they were doing their shows, all these different kind of surprise inspections of what they were doing were there because people didn't understand it. But it's in this atmosphere and environment that all of these apparitions appear at the Eddy House in Vermont. And that's where we see Henry Alcott and Blavatsky meeting and seeing all these different types of phenomena. It's important to see the Fox sisters as the crucial turning point there, along with the Poughkeepsie Seer and others. And they joined forces with a lot of these different people. A lot of it came out of New York as well, which, as we remember, Vermont and New York is where the Mormon piece came out of. There's something that was happening there, and it may have been geographic, using Steiner's interpretation of this. I'm going to go back to Steiner's reading on this, but I just want to touch on a couple of key points around the Fox sisters. Then we'll go to the rest of Steiner's doppelgangers, and then we'll go to your questions. Sure. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 173, Aramonic Doppelganger Mystery School, Steiner Secret Revealed. We're taking your questions here in about 15 minutes and going deep into the doppelganger and the nature of the doppelganger, not as a fascination or as a fiction device, but as the real thing. What is it? And what did the mystery schools leave through Steiner? What was the secret he said was going to be revealed in relation to America and the doppelganger? We're going to get right to that. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Actually, I need to take a sip of tea.
Okay. Excellent. So here's a little bit about what happened with the Fox sisters, who were Leah, Kate, and Maggie. And really, Kate and Maggie did most of the mediumship. So 1848, we have Maggie Fox, 14. Kate's her 11-year-old sister. And they are witnessing frightening phenomena. Apparitions, table rappings, you know, all these different kind of poltergeist type activity in their home. And the neighbors become aware of it, and then they're able to interact with it. So they're able to say, you know, what's your name and all the rest. And they have it counting out different things for different letters. So it becomes a whole back and forth. And with witnesses there, all these things took place. Margaret Fox did not seem to consider, oh, the Fox family deserted the house after all this stuff took place. It was too much of a controversy. And sent Maggie and Kate to live with her older sister, Leah, in Rochester, New York. The story might have died there were it not for the fact that Rochester was a hotbed for reform and religious activity. Oddly enough, the same type of activity starts to follow them when they go to Rochester. Now, one of the things that will cut to the chase around the Fox sisters is years later in that home were found the remains of this individual who was a trader in the area and had disappeared. And so it seems like, interpreting through their original experiences, that the late spirit of this trader who had been killed and buried there at the house was communicating with the sisters. And the sisters had incredibly well-tuned psychic abilities. Now, what happens is pretty interesting because suddenly everyone comes to them for different types of, you know, mediumship. So-and-so has passed away. Can you communicate with them? And it really takes off, and they have a number of different gatherings that go on. Now, they go into the idea that in this period of time, you know, mesmerism has taken place and all the rest. But what's interesting is that Andrew Jackson Davis, who's the Poughkeepsie seer, he has visions about the Fox sisters and how the Fox sisters are this great awakening for humanity, and he needs to join forces with them because he's having these kind of Swedenborgian visions himself. And he writes books about the other side. And, you know, he's a major psychic there in the same area. So Davis invited the Fox sisters to his home in New York City to witness their medium capabilities for himself, joining his cause with the sisters' ghostly manifestations. It elevated her stature, and his stature from obscure prophet to recognized leader of a mass movement. Maggie, Kate, and Leah Fox embarked on a professional tour to spread word of the spirits, and they did a number of these for years, and they called them spiritual knockers, which I think is hilarious.
That is
should
hilarious.
Be a punk band, some name there. So what happens is seances and all these things become all the rage as a result of this. Now, somewhere over there in the UK, this fantastic somnambulist psychic who we've touched on before, Emma Britton, and who was in the Mesmer episode, takes on this incredible role for a group called the Orphic Circle, which included some of the biggest literary figures of the day, like Charles Dickens, the future prime minister of the UK, and all the rest. And they use her, she's around the same age as the Fox sisters, only in her early teens. And they use her as a potent medium for everything from finding state secrets to seeing the future to the nature of humanity, you know, all the rest of it. And she is channeling this information for them. This is taking place in the same period of time, 1848. And what happens is rather abruptly, they send her overseas to America, and they say, you know what, you're an actress. You've been studying to be an actress and a musician and all the rest. We're done with you here. We're sending you to America. And she goes. And when she gets there, she's in these kind of Broadway plays and things. But she talks about this remarkable story of seeing the Fox sisters and how she can see that they're doing the same psychic things that she was doing for the Orphic Circle in the UK. And there's this incredible crisscross. And what we see is that Emma Britton will become a very important medium for Lincoln's wife, because she's trying to contact their recently deceased son. And she'll become a leading figure promoting the candidacy of Abraham Lincoln. So we have this huge tie-in on the political track there as well. Something that's interesting to see, I'm not sure if you can see it here, but one of the things that was being touted in this period was someone named Andrew Mumbler, and he was in Chicago, of all places. And the craze with his activity was that all of these unusual photographs would show up of spirits behind the figures. There is a photograph of Mrs. Lincoln with supposedly Abraham Lincoln behind her. Now, these are very unusual photographs, although, you know, early photographs could have been faked and all the rest of it. There's no question. But this is just to give us some kind of idea of the time. We're getting a handle on it. And of course, Mrs. Lincoln, absolutely fascinating and dedicated deeply to psychic topics. And of course, living a very psychic reality there with Lincoln in the White House and his important role in the Civil War. So what we can see is that Emma Britton, who will eventually form the Theosophical Society with Helena Blavatsky, and the Fox sisters and the Poughkeepsie Seer, all of these people seem to come up out of nowhere and create a mass movement. So what happens to it? Well, the spiritualism movement pulls back dramatically, and something dramatic happens with it where it kind of falls off, the interest falls off, and everything gets subsumed into the Theosophical Society by 1875, founded with Britton and Blavatsky in Boston and New York. Now, if we can get to what was going on here, it's very interesting because you can see the fingerprints of the mystery schools. And Steiner gives us an insight. He says what they were doing and what we were seeing was that the mystery schools had realized people are just seeing that the next world is just like this one. They're thinking of it the wrong way. And we're not getting through this whole thing about elemental beings or universality or whatever. People are very hung up on the fact that, hey, you know, my relative survived, and like they're setting up a house on the other side, and they even called it Summerland. but what's crucial that comes out of it is this awareness of life after death and all of that. But somewhere in the mystery schools, they pull the plug. And what you'll see with the sisters is very interesting. And you can watch how when the mystery schools pull the plug, things go bad for people. Now, the Fox sisters will get into kind of a bickering thing that goes on. And one of them, who is prone to drinking, falls into, you know, kind of a dire situation. And she's offered by these mysterious outfit of skeptics, if you give up the whole thing, if you basically say that it's a fraud, we'll give you a couple thousand dollars, which is a lot of money in the 1850s and 60s. And so she does, but then a year later she says, no, they paid me to do it, and you know, all these things did happen, and I apologize to my sisters. But this is how these forces work in regular society and how they take things off the table. And when they remove that support and protection, the people who are out there are subject to all kinds of different things. But it's very significant, in my opinion, that the mystery schools decided we can't trust humanity on this basic level with this, because they're projecting too much into it. They're not getting the right message from it. And so what they say is, you know, the way we'll do this is we'll work with this character, Blavatsky, and we'll try to do that. And when Blavatsky comes on the scene, it's really an earthquake for everything that we're talking about. And she's somebody who understands directly out of the mystery schools the nature of the spiritual world. And Blavatsky gives us the foundation around the doppelganger from the mystery school perspective, which is important. The doppelganger has shown up in fiction before. There are, you know, different types of myths and things in the Muslim tradition about it. There's even a very unusual incident recounted of Mary at the, you know, going to see Christ's corpse. And one of the strange gardeners who was working the ground says, "Why do you seek the living among the dead?" And she's like, "What is that about? What's going on there?" And when she shows up at the tomb and the tomb is rolled away, the stone is rolled away, she realizes the person who was saying all this to her, although he was dressed up as just a, you know, workman, gardener, whatever, was actually Christ. So there's a weird doppelganger thing even in early Christianity. So it's there, but it's actually, if you look back, and where Steiner gets his foundation, if we're going to be fair, comes directly out of the theosophical tradition of the doppelganger, which she uses traditional Hindu titles for the name, which eventually get confused later, so that the term doppelganger and etheric double, you start to wonder after Blavatsky dies which one is which that we're talking about. In traditional theosophical thought, you have the physical body, you have the astral body, and the etheric body. And the etheric body is kind of an energetic double of the physical body. As a matter of fact, when you have energy healers and things like that, supposedly what they're doing is working directly on the etheric body, and that influences the physical body for all this different types of healing. So now we're back to the doppelganger, and guess who is giving that to us? It's Blavatsky, who has come along to solve the mystery school problem of spiritualism gone off the rails. And that's, in fact, is what she does. Now we're going to talk about what Steiner says the doppelganger is set up for. And then we'll take your questions. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 173, Armonic Doppelganger Mystery School, Steiner Secret Revealed. We're going to be taking your questions momentarily here before I go any further. Miss Olivia, what do you got?
David Termina. DJ, have you looked at the story of Alicia Kent Kane, an Admiral Byrd-like character who explored the North Pole, the man who supposedly secretly married Maggie Fox and made her renounce Spiritism?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. I was not familiar that that was the same person I was reading about in relation to Fox, who had said, oh, you know, you can't do this anymore. And what's weird is he dies shortly after he marries her as well. But it is fascinating to think about the background of that individual. So that's very interesting, the Antarctica connection there. Wow. very interesting. What else you got?
Okay, so Song of Prayer says Ahriman is Ahura Mazda's evil twin. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah, we've laid that out on the show over and over again. And it's very unusual because you find the twins show up over and over in mythological history. There's no question that there's a doppelganger relation to this. As a matter of fact, in a weird way, you could say that Ahriman is Steiner's doppelganger, as odd as that is.
Whoa.
Yeah. And this is kind of why he knows him so well and why he's laid it out there for what he's up to.
So it's like an arch nemesis, or can be.
Well, what's interesting is, as much as it takes on our appearance and things like that, what's weird is that it is developing and trying to overpower the life that we have. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of the religious traditions that are trying to encourage people on the spiritual path are so this other thing doesn't take over. How many people have we seen, maybe looking out in the social life, but even in regular life, or people that we've known who, you know, seem to be on a tremendously good course for this or that, and then something came up like an alcohol or a drug problem and they went off the rails, or, you know, they got involved with the wrong person or whatever it was. That, to me, I think we start to get an inkling of what the doppelganger is all about. Also, you know, it's interesting. You read about people who in their energetic life seem to be living like a very good life, and then they get mixed up with somebody who's into gambling, or they get mixed up with somebody who's into addiction, and then they join in the addiction. Those things to me, you're starting to get about the energetic exchange, which is a deep, deep mystery of humanity. And I think this is where the doppelganger conversation brings us to. Some of the traditional in Star Trek, of course, good versus evil Kirk. How many times did they do that? Multiple times, but especially when they did it, bringing forward the idea that the negative version, the, you know, doppelganger in this case, had something that the other side needed. And so while it's trying to subsume the life and take over and all the rest, it actually, it takes on a part of us, which is a reflection. And without the reflection, you know, we go astray, as it were. But somehow there's the reflection of the doppelganger, which is beneficial. This is the weirdness when you get deep into it.
I mean, basically, it's the dark needs the light and the light needs the dark.
Yes.
Which is something we are not comfortable with.
Yes.
I know I'm not.
Yes. Oh, that's really true. And there's something else with that, which is when you get into looking at what happens with people when, you know, you're talking about things like doppelgangers. If you look into Steiner's work, what you're going to see is there's this character called the Guardian of the Threshold, who is something that anyone who's interested in doing mystery school work needs to face. And it's basically facing the embodiment of all your fears, you know, humanity's fears and all the rest. And it has to be faced and faced honestly. So there's no subterfuge, there's no blocks, nothing. You're just dealing, you have to be honest about your fear with it and all the rest. So the Guardian of the Threshold can take on the image of something terrifying, but once you pass it, it, you know, you are forever changed. Now, what's weird is Steiner will talk about false doppelgangers and false guardians of the threshold. So just when we're getting our heads wrapped around the idea that, like, okay, now I'm starting to figure out this is what mystery work is about, the guardian of the threshold, dealing with the doppelganger and all the rest, then you find out there are false versions of those. So, you know, here's another level.
Is it any wonder we're lost?
It certainly is quite a curriculum, let's put it that way. Agent Cooper in Twin Peaks, I mentioned this about Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is brought to you by Rudolf Steiner's work on Ahriman and the Doppelganger. And, you know, they turned a murder mystery thing into all of the stuff about black lodges and white lodges and Guardian of the Threshold and Hawk and all that stuff. That's all, you know, Steiner. And it is, sometimes it's so literally Steiner that they use the actual phrase. And that's what is insane. And I hear Steiner plagiarized a lot with no, you know, credit at all. And it, you know, it's one of those things. In the case of Twin Peaks, they certainly integrated it well. I will give them that. When Dale Cooper, who's the FBI agent investigating the death of Laura Palmer in the show, goes into the Black Lodge, he, all kinds of things don't work normally. He's subject to all this apothium. Time doesn't work normally, speech, the coffee there, and all the rest of it. But one of the things that he confronts when he's in the lodge is his own doppelganger, who later on in the series takes over and tries to do all these things through his body. But, you know, here he is, this kind of honorable FBI agent, you know, cut from this incredibly ethical cloth and all the rest. But in the lodge is his doppelganger, who's this completely kind of insane character who is on, seem like a nonstop high and, you know, insane laughter and all the rest. Now, what's interesting for me when we get around Cooper and all that is, that's a pretty good snapshot of what Steiner was warning about with the doppelganger getting the upper hand over the normal ego of the individual. And this is the challenge that goes on here. And associating it with the lodge is, again, something that Steiner did, and associating the idea that you could face off against your doppelganger. Now, a couple of things that I'll say I'll quote from Steiner directly about what he's saying about the doppelganger, will give us a hint as to why America becomes important and how understanding the doppelganger, yes, it gives us a kind of psycho-spiritual insight of a deep nature, which is transformational. But it also might solve our understanding of certain geopolitical issues as we get into how America is stationed with a certain type of doppelganger energy and how places like Europe and Russia are set up a little bit differently. So let's get to some of those here. Okay. There was a concept that came about in the 60s about Gaia, humanity, and the globe as a conscious entity, as a living organism. And it's very interesting to see almost hippie-like cosmic, quotes and things from Steiner, and wondering just how much Steiner and Theosophy influenced that whole wave of the kind of Age of Aquarius hippie generation. And how, even though we got a superficial glint on that, there was something again in the 60s that shows up, which is outside of the control of the establishment. And I think we're getting, again, a live experiment here about mystery ideas and the effect of the mystery schools directly in the culture. And then, the lallygaggers thrown in to mess things up. Now, this is very interesting. This other being, the doppelganger, seizes hold of man before birth and has to leave him before death. These various earth forces work with particular strength into the racial and geographical varieties of humanity. So it is on this doppelganger, which man carries within himself, that geographical and other diversities exert special influence. This is the extraordinarily important fact. Tomorrow we shall see how the double is influenced from various points on the earth and what the consequences are. I've already indicated to you that you'll need to bring what I have said today into direct connection with what I shall be saying in the next lecture. We have to assimilate ideas which are most seriously related to the total reality in which the human soul lives. In accordance with its own nature, this reality goes through various metamorphoses, but now these changes occur depends to a great extent on humanity, on human souls, according to whether they absorb materialistic or spiritual concepts between birth and death. They are exiled to the earth or pass on to their rightful spheres. The ideas in these matters that prevail among us must truly be continually clearer. So he's really laying a lot of emphasis on how we understand the doppelganger. And he's also suggesting there's the first hint that the doppelganger is related to a place, and that America, the Americans and the people who reside there are going to have a different doppelganger than somebody who is living somewhere, say like in Russia, which is unusual if you think about it. There is something that works against the materializing of human souls, this exiles of souls in the earthly sphere. The lodges exist on earth, and if the souls are to manifest and to be made use of in the lodges, they must be kept in this earthly exile. This gets into very interesting territory because, according to Steiner, there are certain occult groups that work to keep people after they pass out of this life in that same eighth sphere, dumbed down consciousness, so they don't reach this spiritual awakening and normal spiritual evolutionary track. So this is very interesting. What he's saying is these occult groups use them and continue to use them in this fashion after they use them while they're alive and they use them after they're dead. So I think that gives us some kind of insight that what we're looking at with the mystery schools is you have wide groups that are operating with the intent of moving the culture forward in a positive fashion. And then this other thing, which I refer to as these left secret societies. So a little more on this. The aim of these brotherhoods I've spoken of, who wish to confine human souls in the material realm, is that the Christ should pass by unobserved in the 20th century, in the 21st century. There are Western brotherhoods who want to dispute the impulse of Christ and set in his place another individuality who has never appeared in the flesh, a strongly Ahrimanic one. All these methods I've told you about, this working with the dead and so on, have finally one single purpose: to lead people away from the Christ who's passed through the mystery of Golgotha and to assign another being dominion over the earth. This is a very real battle, not an affair of abstract concepts. Steiner's given you a lot there about the nature of the battle of the mystery schools. And it's basically setting the Ahriman entity force as a basic antichrist. Now, and what he's saying is they'll set him up as a ruler in here. So that's kind of big for Steiner as well, who does not lay into preaching, let's say, in his work. For him to step outside the box like that and even use the term antichrist, I think is huge. Here we have one side of the situation. A number of brotherhoods actually do wish to substitute for the working of Christ the working of another being and are ready to use any means to bring this about. I think that that, you know, in terms of the aims, is very telling. Now, let's get to exactly his final comments on the doppelganger, and then we will take your questions. Everyone,
great questions.
You're watching The Dark Journalist Show. I bet. I can just imagine the ideas where I'm going crazy with this. And I want to mention to the ideas room directly, to everyone there who's paying attention and commenting, you know, never underestimate the power of a conversation of this level. When it's potent, it ripples everywhere. And I'll use an example of the Judge Napolitano revelation about JFK and Trump. And as I mentioned, Trump suggested that the CIA was behind the push to stop him releasing the JFK assassination files. That's new. Before, he had just said, well, you know, and now he's saying, I'll release all of it. And he's saying, I think it's important because we all need to learn from it. And guess what? He says, there's something else that needs to come out. Very interesting. That is just from a conversation yesterday. Now, literally a year and a half ago, Judge Napolitano, who has a great following from his work, he was on Fox for years. He did all this libertarian stuff. He's very fantastic legal mind. And he got into doing his own show, and he had, you know, he'd picked up on a number of things like Ukraine and all the rest. But he went on a little show. It was a radio show, and there was a YouTube channel with it. It was small. It was, I think that the show got maybe something like 1,400 views or something. It wasn't anything remarkable. But as I was sitting there listening to it, he recounted a conversation that he had with President Trump before Trump left office, saying, you know, release the files. And Trump saying, "If you, there's no way I can't release it," and nobody could. And, you know, basically Napolitano was like, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Andrew, if you knew it was in those files, there's no way that you'd release them either." So whatever it was that Trump saw was remarkable. This was a little conversation on a blog somewhere. Nothing was happening with it. You and I, mm-hmm. I, in the ideas room, talked about this, and it started to ping pong around. And you know what? Somehow Napolitano heard about it, and he started to talk about it on the different shows that he was going on. And it reached its way around to all of the major news outlet that he had said this. That's the power of the ideas room. Of this one outpost of very potent information is that, you know, over and over again, from the things we bring up on this program, they will ricochet into all of these different areas. But you'll find very often that they come from this obscure corner and just something that came up that when I listened to it, I said to myself about Napolitano's, you know, real major disclosure there. I said, this is remarkable. I don't think in the JFK case there has actually been something that is that big as a disclosure. I really don't. Because what Trump was basically saying is there is something in the records that they've been holding on to for 61 odd years with ridiculous excuses. And it struck me as weird because I'd heard every different thing about the records. And when I had talked about them, people would say to me, well, you know, the CIA is not going to leave anything in those records. Forget about it. Apparently, there's some mechanism left over from what Robert Kennedy did with the records that if they were to wipe it out, in my opinion, it would set off so many bells and whistles in the system that the deep state would be in even deeper problems. So they decided, you know what? We're going to lay back on this. And what we'll do is just stonewall forever. Everyone will die off. No one will care. And we'll just keep saying, oh, it's national security. That's the way that they decided to deal with it. By the time they got to Trump, somebody came in there. He didn't identify who they were, but he said they weren't CIA, but they were sent in by CIA. That's new. He hadn't said that before. It came out yesterday. So the conversation there is changing. And also what he's alluding to, saying we need to learn from what's in the JFK files, one, and that he would pledge to release them, but also saying there's something else. And that crisscross there with JFK and the UFO file that we've brought forward on this program in documentaries and different things that we've done with X-Protect, that's, you're getting a hint there of what can happen with the conversation and how it can ricochet through so many different places. And all that core of it is the conversation that we have right here in the ideas room. So keep that in mind as we go forward. Yes, Ms. Olivia.
Joe Gallo said, I would love to know if Casey or others talked about twins or doubles.
There's no question. Blavatsky put it esoterically on the record. Before that, it was showed up in different, you know, religious traditions. It showed up in fiction even. But, and some of the fiction I think is quite remarkable. I mentioned that Goethe talked about it previously and that he had seen a version of himself 8 years difference, his own doppelganger, doing something very productive. So yeah, there's no question that it was. Actually, you know what I think I'm going to do is, take questions now and then read the quotes into the questions.
Okay.
To make
and
sure
we the rest in. All right.
Yeah. And before we go there, you're watching the X series 173, Armonic Doppelganger. This is the Dark Journalist Show. This is the mystery on the Steiner Secret Revealed. We're going to go directly into your questions now. I want to remind you, I have your attention though, that to sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com. This is the thing that keeps us in touch and gets us around even the censorship right here on this platform, YouTube. So many people have complained about not getting notifications and things like that. Social media is hard. It's not very dependable for this, especially with the heavy, heavy censorship that they lay on this show, and with good reason. You just do a search of Dark Journalist and see what you get versus, you know, a search of some Gaia nonsense. You know, and they do that on purpose and they fracture the way that we get results. But nonetheless, here we are and doing it. The best way to make sure you understand and find the important interviews, documentaries, and events, and all the things that are coming up that are remarkable for you, interviews that'll blow your mind, X-Series episodes that are some of the best. We are, you know, laying out the foundation for these documentary series. So many of these important things are happening now. So the best way to stay in touch and to hear about them first, to stand up and be noticed, be on that free newsletter. And you can do that right at darkjournalist.com. Of course, subscribe to the show, get behind the work that we're doing here. And with that, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay, Najat Madri. In anthroposophy, there are Aramonic doubles and Luciferic doubles inside all of us. They enter our bodies 17 days after birth, and they leave almost the same amount of time just before death. Also, Najat, could doppelgangers exist on other planets?
Well, it's interesting because, see, there's two things about Steiner and doppelgangers. One, he focused on them in 1917. There's light mention here and there before that. He focused on it. Very heavy duty, two lectures that are major, it drops off completely. So I think in the grand scheme of the setup, you read, when you go through those, you'll see very often that he'll say things like, I've said as much as I can say, or, you know, almost like I've said too much already, and trying to rein himself back in. He also mentions that if he had said certain things, he would fall under instant psychic attack if he had revealed certain secrets of the brotherhoods and the different mystery schools and secret societies. But at the same time, he says, I'll let this secret out, I'll let that secret out. And he finds a way to do this. But I find it interesting that the doppelganger conversation, which is so important, is basically kept in this major lecture series in 1917. It is not expanded on, say, in the 20s. And you feel it's so potent and rich with information. He's also saying at the time, you can imagine if we were talking about this publicly. But of course, at a certain point, he decides, you know what, let all the Ahriman lectures out, let these doppelganger lectures out. And it goes beyond just the circle that's working with him there, which I think is a brave decision. And it mirrors the decision by the noble forces in the mystery schools in the 1840s, who said, we're letting this out, even if the majority of the schools who are keeping to arcane rules about keeping the information, very often with good reason. But, you know, you have to recognize the threat. And if they keep all the secrets and it's great for a few people, but humanity goes under, then the whole concept is lost. So, you know, Steiner's doing the same thing. He's saying, well, you know what? World War One is here. The anthroposophical teaching didn't get out in time. Theosophy failed on some level, although it enlightened humanity. I'm putting it all out. I think that that's very significant, but if you really want to see how heavy the doppelganger conversation is, search for it in his work after 1917. It's a problem. You know, obviously it was a problem for those groups to talk about that. That's what I think gets into the very sensitive nature of what he was discussing there. Yes.
Happy Hermit 3D. Does humanity itself have a doppelganger? If humanity is defined by empathy, our doppelganger would be the war of all against all, rather like the eighth sphere?
Oh, wow. Well, that's really getting into it. Now, Look, here's the thing. Everything is microcosm, macrocosm, right? So when you're dealing with the life of an individual, when that person is doing a certain thing, they're accomplishing a kind of a paradigm is coming out of that, a pattern. And remember, it's one-to-one. You know, people think about these large movements and all the rest. But if you look at Christ's teaching, what is he doing? I mean, he's healing an individual one person at a time. When he encounters different individuals and deals with them, it's one-to-one, you know. So you have to think of it as every experience that grows into a huge macrocosm is based on the initial thread of the thing. So it's building out, as it were. But in terms of the whole thing about doppelgangers, yeah, if an individual, one individual has a doppelganger, and we all do, then it's, you know, it's a humanity issue, which is why I think it's so fascinating. And also there's something unconsciously, I think, that registers with it, which is why you see it used so often in fiction and everything else. And there's a kind of humor to it too, which is we all kind of know unconsciously that something is going on there. The war of all against all is interesting because this is pretty cosmic and literal at the same time. So the literal part is you see it now with them pushing for a nuclear war against Russia and how we've lived under that. And, you know, our parents and grandparents and great grandparents lived under it ever since we dropped the bomb and, you know, Oppenheimer and Einstein and all those guys worked on it. And all these other countries got it. So we've lived under this strange thing of massive physical destruction. And when you look at the period that we're in and how it is the huge face-off for these forces, you can see that there's a war of all against all that they're intent upon. But who's driving it? You know, is it just human ingenuity that wants this to be accomplished. This gets into the number of beings that are around us here on Earth in this situation. So that becomes a very kind of cosmic question, and it deals with good and evil and all the rest. But I will say this, that Steiner does a wonderful thing when he's talking about the war of all against all, which is the harmonic influence at a certain point, its desire, its lust for war, brings us to the point in his visioning where the right side of the human body wars with the left side of the human body. So, you know, take it up to that notch, take it up to that level and think, this is a force that literally feeds on conflict. And I think that's a good way to think about it. Yes.
Okay. So, Cece, do you think you'd have a psychic link to your own doppelganger, like deja vu? And Brenda Fisher, yes. How does the doppelganger factor into the shadow work as described by C.G. Jung?
Well, here's the thing. I feel like psychology and psychiatry, therapy, and things like that they're a step forward in culture, but they were coming in from a place of dramatic, what could have been dramatic progress. And so kind of the last gasp of any kind of progress from that came about in Jung's work, which is he looked at it and said, oh yeah, they left all this other stuff out, like alchemy, like Swedenborg and all the rest. And, you know, side by side with Freud, you know, Freud said, if you deal with any of that, you'll throw the mud of occultism into our work. So even though, you know, I believe in a lot of the things you're talking about, I'm sticking to this. And so we got all kinds of very basic stuff, you know, the whole, you know, Oedipus complex and all these types of things. And it was very superficial. And largely through a lens of repressed sexuality and all that kind of stuff, very heavy on the materialism and going nowhere spiritually, really. And so much of therapy became like that. And I think considering where it was going, coming out of that Mesmer, Puysegur, all that work that we focused on in the Mesmer episode, Charcot and all that, and to what it ended up as, you know, feeding all these people into a pharmaceutical trough, it's a real disgrace. So, but I think that Jung's work does stand out from that. And I think when he's talking about the shadow, yeah, it's definitely related to the doppelganger piece. I bet, as a matter of fact, if we were to search his own work, we'd find that. And it's interesting because we know that he read Steiner. He read Swedenborg. He had volumes of Swedenborg in his some of the biographical accounts. He was very knowledgeable around the esoteric side. So, yeah. So we got some things from Jung. But again, that whole field of psychology, tremendously dumbed down. Yes.
Caritas Tarot. So was Alice in Wonderland the story of a doppelganger?
Well, I think there's so many esoteric truths inside of it that, I think there we're getting a real esoteric, initiation that takes place. So I think the doppelganger comes up, but I think the focus is the initiation, interestingly enough. I'm going to read a quick thing on Steiner that might sort of gel the conversation a little bit further on this. It's exceedingly interesting for a clairvoyant to explore the astral world. He may, for example, observe astral corpses floating about in process of dissolution. The astral corpse of a highly developed man who has worked with his lower impulses will dissolve very quickly, but with undeveloped persons who have given free rein to their impulses and passion, the process of dissolution goes slowly in the astral plane now, lower astral. Sometimes the earlier astral corpse is not wholly dissolved when its original bearer returns to a new birth, and he will face a difficult destiny. It can also happen that through special circumstances, a man returns soon and finds his astral corpse is still present. And he's talking about reincarnation cycles here. Someone comes back in and they still have to face off against what they've done in a recently previous life. The corpse is then strongly drawn to him and slips into his new astral body. He does indeed create a new astral body, but the old one combines with it, and he has to drag both of them along throughout his life. And then in bad dreams or visions, the old astral body comes before him as a second ego playing tricks on him, harassing and tormenting him. Think about various types of mental illness and things like that. How would that be resolved? You might find a number of different mental issues would be resolved if somebody were dealing with this. This is the false counterfeit guardian of the threshold. An old astral corpse finds its way to withdraw from a man because it is not firmly united with the other members of his being. Then it appears as a doppelganger. Besides these astral forms, the clairvoyant sees another particularly remarkable set of shapes. Now, clue in on the UFO file when I read this. Watch me now. These shapes are bell-shaped and shoot through astral space with enormous speed. They are germinal human beings not yet incarnated, but striving for incarnation. Time and space hardly matter to these beings because they can move about very easily. They are variously colored and surrounded by an aura of color. At one point, they're red, at another blue, or shining yellow ray flashes. How often do we hear about orbs and different things of this nature? Shining yellow ray flashes out from inside them. These germinal human beings have just come from Devakon into astral space. What is happening here? So you can see that the process of reincarnation and preparing for an incarnation and things of that gets into this as well. And also that even though we're talking about the real doppelgangers and the guardian of the threshold and these various things, as I mentioned, there are counterfeit versions of these as well. So when you're dealing in the realm of astral humanity and dealing in the physical realm, there's lots of layers of illusion, shall we say. I think that's a kind of a key thing in Steiner's work. Yes,
Crypto Sherpa. Does DJ think that some entities like the Greys could be creating biological shells for other non-human consciousness to inhabit?
Yes. Yeah. See, this is very important. Let's see if I have it here. But what if I were to tell you that this, which is a drawing by Betty and Barney Hill of the leader that took them on board the ship. Let's take it out of an extraterrestrial context just for a moment and put it into a doppelganger context. And that the doppelganger here is that they're looking at humanity's doppelganger, which will become kind of less and less human, more and more scientific or whatever. I think it's interesting in that you can interpret and look at these things a little bit differently when you're esoterically informed. So that a number of these things, you know, right now we've talked about this so much in the UFO field. People go over a cliff over and over. Oh, you know, I've seen this technology and all the rest. They throw all the work of people like John Mack and all these other people out the window, you know, and Mack was the guy who actually was the Harvard professor who studied all this and risked his life and his job and everything else. By the way, in that Harvard study where they're talking about crypto-terrestrials, they want to talk about everything alien, but they won't mention Mack. Well, he comes from Harvard. But I think when you look at it, it's interesting because the field gets very caught up in the technology. They get very caught up in the wave of like, oh, is it a takeover and all this kind of stuff. So they use fear and all the threat tactics and, you know, oh, you know, they can overtake our ships and they were throwing beach balls at our Navy ships and all the rest. Look, if you really take a look at the UFO field and the UFO file, you're going to find it loaded with this apotheum characteristic. The Pothium characteristic mirrors very, very much a lot what they're talking about on the astral side. So there's some connection, certainly. And the idea of just a flat run from another galaxy to this one in a ship doesn't hold up. I wouldn't dismiss the idea of an off-world civilization at all, but I think these things need to be brought out in a much deeper fashion. Yes.
Channeling of the Heart, Barbara Joyce, do zombies come in here?
Oh, I think what's interesting, you go even a little bit into Steiner's work and the misuse of people who are in a zombie state or actual, you know, people who've passed beyond and their bodies are being used for different things. Steiner's aware of the lowest type of mystical groups doing this. And I think it's important because, you know, what's good is that people understand a lot about life after death now. And you're seeing more shows and people going through these types of experiences. It's still, I think, in general, that we live in a kind of, you know, in society, in a kind of a blank space when it comes to the afterlife and all the rest. So, obviously, this is very deeply related. As a matter of fact, very early on in Steiner's life, he could follow people who had died into the spiritual world. And he recounts in his autobiography, actually read that quote, when he was 10 doing this. And but just so it's out of the horse's mouth, as it were, I'll read it. And then we'll take more of your questions, and then we'll wrap up in about 15 minutes. Does that grab you? Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist X Series. This is X Series episode 173, Aramonic Doppelganger Mystery School, Steiner's Secret Revealed, going deep on Steiner and his concept of the doppelganger, which brings us into geography and geopolitics, as well as the more mystical strata. So here he is talking about himself at 10 in his autobiography, which is a great book. And I think it's just called Chapters in the Course of My Life. I was convinced I would find no relation to science unless their results rested on a secure philosophical foundation. But I perceived the spiritual world as immediate reality, even when he was 10. Now, the spiritual individuality of each person was revealed to me with total clarity. The bodily nature and activity in the physical world was merely the individual's expression, which united itself with the physical germ from the parents. When people died, I followed them as they journeyed into the spiritual world. After the death of a former classmate, I wrote about this aspect of my inner experience to a former teacher for whom I'd retained a friendly relationship. His reply was unusually kind, but not a single word in that letter referred to what I had written about the dead schoolmate. That was always the response of my experience of the spiritual world. Nobody wanted to hear about it. At most, someone would come forward with something spiritualistic. Then I was the one who did not want to listen. To me, it seemed like an absurd way to approach the spiritual. And it's interesting because Steiner already had this as a boy of 10. So his mission is very clear in this sense, that he already understands the going into the spiritual world, the afterlife. It's a very fascinating thing about Steiner is that as a child, he went to a cottage that his parents owned, and he saw a woman there. And she had this long discussion with him, and he thought she was a relative. And then she would disappear into the oven. And then he would tell his parents about it, and they were like, no, you know, don't talk about it. And then finally it kept happening. And by the third time it happened, his mother sat him down and said, that was, you know, one of our relatives, and she was like an aunt of yours, and she died under sad circumstances. So, you know, but he was seeing her and she was conversing with him when he's 8. If you go into Casey's work, you'll find that he's very close to Thomas Jefferson Casey, who is his grandfather and takes him everywhere. And he goes into a little place to feed the horse, and he's on the horse, and the horse throws him into the water. And even though it's shallow water, the grandfather drowns, and Casey, who's only 5 years old at the time, can't do anything about it. So he has to watch this whole thing play out, and he's traumatized. But 3 days later, he sees the grandfather in full figure in this barn and talks all about him and says, you know, it's unfortunate, but everything's going to be okay. And, you know, he gives him this big speech and all the rest. And Casey goes off to his parents and says, oh, I saw my grandfather, you know, he gave me this big speech about how he's still around and not to worry about it. And this would happen with Casey over and over again, where he would see deceased loved ones and people would come to him from the astral world. They were still seeking advice from him, even though they had passed on. And it's interesting because the parents at the time were just like, oh, you know, Edgar has a hyperactive imagination or whatever. But what's strange is from there on, Casey kept having this interaction with the grandfather. And sometimes they would hear him talking, you know, while he's doing work in the barn or whatever. And they're like, what's going on there? He's having this conversation, full conversation with the spirit who isn't there. Yes.
I want to pepper in some stories. Tina Barr says, I saw someone who looked just like me at a festival and she was about 15 feet away. This was 40 years ago. It blew me away. Peter Nuss says, I ran into Betty White's doppelganger in Walmart, who was a greeter, and her badge name was Betty.
Whoa. Huh. Wow.
There's more.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, Twilight Mist. I had a new eye doctor, person and location, tell me that I was a doppelganger of a longtime patient of his. He was acting weird before he told me. Said I had the exact same looks and mannerisms, so much so that he had to triple check to make sure I was a new patient. Apparently, she lives in a nearby city and works at a bank, which I have a hat of and am strangely attached to, and it's not my bank. So strange.
Oh, that's great. See, I think this is how this works. And again, you know, I think in the case of some of these, we're talking about types that are so similar, but then there are actual kind of almost supernatural sightings here, and it becomes almost undeniable. Let's face it, there's a huge, and I mean a huge, political piece about people who work as doubles for presidents and high-ranking officials of all kinds. And you have to wonder at a certain point where we are technologically, biologically, and all the rest, if they aren't just making clones at this point. And if they haven't been doing that for quite a while, it makes sense to me. As complicated and complex a process as it would be. Let's see what else I have here. Of course, Steiner. So Steiner, let's remember, you know, I mean, we think of him very much as this kind of wunderkind and, you know, this marvel. But here he was, this incredibly advanced individual. And it is odd because he was doing poorly in school and his grammar was terrible, which I found interesting. And what happens is he meets this illiterate gardener. And the illiterate gardener opens up the spiritual world to him and eventually introduces him to, you know, his master, M. And, but that gardener, who supposedly was, you know, regarded as just this kind of, you know, illiterate gardener, herbologist guy who was in the village, he was spotted out Steiner very early. And so we have to kind of look back at Steiner and see the remarkable things here that he left in this trek to say, how does humanity get over what they're going to face over the next few hundred years into the future? And how does all this play out? It is quite remarkable what he was able to accomplish. This is an original sketch, as unusual as it is, of the doppelganger invading the physical body. This is how he described it. Take a good look at that from his original blackboard drawing. And the red aspects you can see is the outline of a human being. And we have this other thing coming in, as it were, and dominating or attempting to dominate the physical person. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Peter Nuss, another twist is your doppelganger is your interdimensional self, even your guardian angel. And Gummy Bear says, my husband and I saw a doppelganger couple. They sat next to us in Vegas at a convention, then left. They looked like an angelic version of us.
Oh, interesting. Wow. That's incredible. See, this is something which there's no regular science that can describe it. You have to go into a deeper esoteric place in order to understand the nature of the experience. That's what I love about those.
And on that note, Cosmic Phoenix says, I'm experiencing high strangeness and paranormal activity. How do we tell the difference between false doppelganger and real one? Any tips for this encounter?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, the concept around the whole doppelganger part and the usefulness of it, for example, is being aware that there's a doppelganger and that it can outsize its influence on you. So that at times when people have impulse control, and I was talking about addiction issues before, that is fueled, in Steiner's understanding, it's fueled by this doppelganger, because the doppelganger has its own sense of its destiny and how it can use you. It kind of feels entitled to your life, as it were, but you have the ultimate control. The thing is, so it's kind of like this mirror image that's there, and these esoteric traditions are more or less saying, watch it in this way, because it can be influenced by other things, and so you find yourself kind of at war with yourself if your doppelganger runs over a cliff. Now, we've seen people who say, you know, when they got famous, they took on this certain kind of personality, and it, you know, their ego went to their head and all the rest of it. Seems to me you're getting into part of the psychology of the doppelganger there. And somebody could just say, well, you know, that was just somebody going off on an ego trip or whatever. It's true. However, apparently there's a deeper aspect involved in it. So if you were sitting there with someone who is clairvoyant, they would be able to see the two of you. And so that gets us into maybe a deeper conversation than somebody who would just, you know, take it as, you know, oh, that person went over a cliff. But in terms of being able to interpret what's real and what isn't, you know, I will tell you this, that, and this isn't to make some big claim or whatever, but there was an occasion that I had to see somebody actual their features morph, and I wasn't on drugs or anything like that. So there's no question, and you hear a lot about a lot of things, and there's all this, you know, the reptilian stuff really gets people into that. They're like, oh, so-and-so transformed into a reptilian, but it's so pat, isn't it, right?
It doesn't mean it's not true.
Right. But for me, you know, it's not to go over a cliff on these things. It's not to put it in the realm of imagination, but it is something to be aware of. And I feel fortunate that I'm have an experience of being able to see. And it's hard with your everyday consciousness, with your day in, day out. You know, Steiner mentions actually that the doppelganger can be handy because he was talking about how a mystical individual could be on the threshold of going into this initiatory phase and, you know, becoming a really initiated master, but that they could be so in their head about their idealism and all the rest of it that they could, you know, get hit by a car or have some physical a problem in their everyday life, and that life could be cut short because of something that they did where they weren't paying attention to the day-to-day function of their consciousness. So that balance was essential. And there was something about the doppelganger that Steiner was getting at where he's saying, actually, this can be very helpful in that circumstance because the doppelganger is sort of like the balance thing. It's something for you to keep an eye on. And by having that awareness, apparently you don't float off into total universal mind and forget about your physical reality. Yes, Ms.
Laudrey. Someone in the chat room mentioned clones. Are clones human manifestations of doppelgangers?
Well, there's a lot of problem with clones. And this is the nature of it, because what you have is the same problem that the Atlantean scientists had when it came to what they were doing. So cloning required, you know, for someone just to have a clone there, you know, a soul would have to embody it for it to be an actual clone. So whatever would be kind of created, you couldn't really, as a human clone, you couldn't actually refer to as human, because there's a setup in our endocrine system that allows us to house a soul. And if you go into the mystery traditions, Casey work and other places, you'll find that there's a function there. The silver cord of the pituitary, pineal, and Leydig systems hold, they're kind of the seat of the soul. And so just like when they talk about avatars and projecting your consciousness into a box and all that kind of stuff, they know, it's weird when you hear about people like Musk, and unless they're just total idiots, or they just like saying this publicly, but they know that that actually can't be accomplished, because your physical vehicle is the holder of your consciousness. You can project your consciousness into different places, and astral projection and things of this nature. And of course, some people can go to where they can observe entire incidents. That's where remote viewing comes from. But this idea that you could somehow construct something and that it would be human isn't correct. So,
well, it'd be human-like.
Yes, right. So it's a human cyborg. That's really what we're talking about when you get to clones. So it's very much like Stepford Wives, and you know, that's why I say Stepford Biden.
I'm trying to remember an episode you did, an interview maybe with Linda Moulton Howe or something about clones. Isn't there something in there with the alien clones? There's some.
Well, what was interesting and caught my imagination with Linda's work is there are a number of cases that she had where their encounters, the people that she had interviewed, they would encounter aliens who would show them perfect clone versions of them. But that is interesting, and it lends itself to the doppelganger conversation, I think, on a deeper level. And what's interesting is when I follow up this episode, it's going to be about the Guardian of the Threshold. It's going to be part two of this conversation, and you're going to see how this idea of the Guardian of the Threshold and the doppelganger mystery are going to complete a larger picture. And it is interesting because it gets uncomfortably close to the UFO file. And so the mystery schools and the UFO file is the nature of the work that we're bringing forward next. And you can see hints of it throughout the X series for sure. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Okay. So let me get into this. Seattle Metaphysical Library. Do you think that benevolent mystery schools are omniscient and are moving deliberately? Or do you think they are trying out different scenarios to see what works?
Well, this is interesting. The schools are, there's a track record of them. So I don't want them to be thought of as some kind of imaginary thing. And I think that they can, you know, people can imagine that. And maybe on a thought level, there are things that are just like that. But schools exist. People have come out of them. I've talked to people who've gone in and out of them, but I think they're, you know, most of the time, what someone would think of as a mystery school is a private study school. So I've talked about these levels before, and I'll just do a quick bullet point thing on them. So you have at the very top of this structure, the, you know, the height of the mystery schools, like, so the Great White Brotherhood, and then you have something called lesser schools. And, you know, lesser schools is one of those kind of penitent names, humble names, because they know so much, but they call themselves lesser school. And they know maybe about half of what you would learn at that incredibly high level. Then arcane schools are where they use the technique and they preserve the technique perfectly so that they don't change it, they don't improve it. So the same thing that you would have, you know, in the time of Pythagoras is preserved exactly. So arcane schools exist, and those people are very incredibly knowledgeable. But it's a step below the lesser schools, and the lesser schools are a step, you know, in terms of knowledge and methods between these other schools. And then, but below that, you have a whole huge corridor of private study groups. And so they, you know, you'd have a private study group dealing with Steiner's work, or public mystery schools, Anthroposophy, Gurdjieff, and all the rest. So that brings you into the orbit of the whole thing. You know, it builds up that magnetic center we talk about in this program. And then below that is, you know, public study group. You go into a public lecture of a thing. That's the way to think about it. So sometimes people have told me, oh, I joined a mystery school online or whatever. And I just say, well, you basically, you know, you joined a public forum or a private forum dealing with a particular set of ideas. That's not a mystery school. There's nothing wrong with that. It builds up your magnetic center. You know, reading this book in the privacy of your own home builds your magnetic center. Some people might have the most incredible experiences doing that. I'm just saying what we're talking about specifically in terms of schools, they actually do exist. They're rare in everyday life, but you will encounter them and you'll see their footprints in everyday life. So I hope that answers that question. Yes.
Are they, well, this is the whole thing of omniscience. Yes. Are they responding to in real time? I mean, there's a war of the mystery schools going on.
Right? Oh yeah. All the schools have been in a process of war because they're coming from such different places, but they both, what's interesting about the left hand, or I shouldn't actually say that. I should just call them left groups or shadow groups. So I'll just say shadow groups who work more on that, you know, self-aggrandizing side versus this other side, which is that they both possess the same type of knowledge. And it's high mystical knowledge, but what you do with it is what you do with it. And the nature of unethical practice, you know, instantly comes with a price. So that's the nature of what we're talking about there. And so the groups that are trying to serve this Ahrimanic future are what is what we're talking about. And there are a lot of them. And they were, in Steiner's time, they were really, you know, in deep power circles of America and the UK, France, Russia. I mean, they were all over. So I can only imagine how the situation has changed. You know, Steiner has a mention that when Blavatsky came to America in 1875, 90% of the political process was run by mystery schools of one stripe or another. There were benevolent ones in there too. But that structure, you know, they all possess such power in a sense that they face off against each other. And there's a very heightened group trying to move humanity in the right direction. There's no question about it.
Is it a never-ending battle? Is it part of their evolution to fight with each other? Do they need that as at their level of spiritual development?
I think that Steiner has said that the Ahrimanic forces have been involved in trying to take over since, you know, the Atlantean era. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about something which is part of the earthly evolution. I think the danger and the threat involved is that the technological, scientifically materialistic era that we've moved into means that there's a real threat that humanity's path of spiritual evolution could be interrupted or destroyed. And that's the danger of the period that we're in and why this kind of information becomes that much more important. It's interesting. Again, as Casey does, Steiner attributes a lot to Russia's future spiritual development. Something is set to come out of Russia at some point, which provides some kind of shot in the arm spiritually. And it's hard, you know, with the current leadership, it's hard to see that. but it is interesting nonetheless. I'm going to read about that and we'll take your final round of questions.
Okay.
Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is Dark Journalist X Series, episode 173, Armonic Doppelganger Mystery, the Steiner Secret Revealed. We're taking your questions now. And I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for that newsletter. It's a free newsletter. It keeps us in touch with you. I would say this is probably the heightened period of censorship that we've ever experienced. And there's a reason for that. And it's the nature of the conversations we have right here in the Ideas Room. But if you do that, you stand a much better chance of hearing about all the incredible things we have coming up for you. Stand up and be counted and make sure you are there, hearing it first, getting it first, understanding what events are coming up, documentaries, X-Series episodes, incredible interviews, off the charts, personalities, the very best coming your way. And it's all right there in your newsletter. Okay, Russia. Okay. The nature of Russianness, and this is Steiner's lecture again, 1917. The nature of Russianness, for example, is intimately related to the soil. And he's talking about the earth here as an organism. But the Russian takes very special forces out of the ground, forces that do not come from the earth. The secret of the Russian geography lies therein, that the Russians take up from the earth what was first imparted as light to the earth, which is then returned by the earth. In other words, the Russians take up from the earth what streams from outer regions to the earth. The Russians live, Russians love their earth, but they do so because it is a mirror of them, for them, of the heavens. Therefore, however territorially minded the Russians may be, they have in their territorial disposition something which, although still in a childlike stage, is extraordinarily cosmopolitan. For as the earth moves through space, it comes into contact with all the possible parties surrounding it. Furthermore, if you take up into your soul not what streams from below to above, but what from streams above to below and back up again, then what you are taking in differs from what streams directly from the earth into a certain relationship with human nature. What the Russians love about the earth, what permeates them, gives them many weaknesses, yes, but also, above all, a certain ability to overcome the doppelganger nature that I have just been speaking to you about. That is why they will be called upon to provide the most important impulses in the age in which the doppelganger nature will have to be combated and overcome. The sixth post-Atlantean cultural period. That's the one we're moving into because we're in the fifth. So here he is talking about this nature. And he's also saying that, you know, America has to deal, it has to face off against its most kind of sensational, you know, the most powerful doppelganger force comes directly out of America. And he relates it to this north-south piece, which I guess opens up a different conversation that we'll get into in another episode. But I will say this. He talks about it, and when I was able to track down the actual mountain ranges from his description of where this doppelganger force has its most intense power, it looked like Sierra Nevada was the area where the doppelganger was most active. And it's very interesting to think of that area and all of this unusual UFO activity related to it, and, you know, the kind of power of the magnetic piece that Steiner's getting at here, and think, oh, isn't that interesting? Yes, Miss Olivia.
Okay. Najat Madri, Steiner mentions in his lectures of shapeshifters invading governments. Could doppelgangers be confused with shapeshifters by trickster spirits playing with humanity? And Rat Boy Genius says, a big question is there a procedure for incarnating non-human souls into human clones?
I think this is the this is the attempt. What's weird is, if you go into certain Steiner lectures, he will talk about a small group of these shadow mystery schools. So really the secret societies. working in a, you know, evil fashion. And what they do is they're working to keep souls into this eighth sphere concept and idea. But what's interesting is when you think of somebody doing that, you think, oh, you know, they want to control them during their lifetime and have all these things happen. But what Steiner's suggesting is that they want to keep them past their lifetime. So they keep them for their lifetime, and then they want to move them into this eighth sphere piece. So they'll control them on a spiritual level, and they'll control them on a physical level. What's interesting is when you go into mystery schools and their understanding, you're going to find that reincarnation's at the core, and that the idea is that we, after leaving this life, go through various planetary sojourns. We learn things almost like classrooms and come back here and apply those various concepts. And then often included, as I've mentioned in a number of episodes, is the idea of Arcturus as the doorway out of the system and into the next. Now, that seems to be this kind of open doorway. Once you've accomplished all the things in this galaxy and on Earth, you move beyond, and then you can also use it as a doorway back and forth where you can come back and, you know, do an incarnation here and help everyone else out, kind of thing. Now, the eighth sphere thing gets in the way of all this, because it is, in Steiner's terminology, a bogus step. So it's not meant, there's no actual setup for it. It's a recreation. It's a caricature of actual development, soul development. So what happens in Steiner's cosmology is Ahriman, in this virtual reality way, keeps people caught up on Earth with kind of false ideals and false images of things. And then when they pass through their lifetime, they enter, instead of going into the normal chain of their reincarnation, they enter into the eighth sphere and come right back directly to Earth. So they're more and more, they become more and more coarse. And these groups control their incarnations. Now, that's, you know, that goes deep into the cosmology. But then when you think to yourself, okay, then that means the eighth sphere is just some place you go to after you die. And like, nobody smart would want to go there because it's controlled by these Ahrimanic forces. But what he also says is that the eighth sphere is all around us. So the way he describes the eighth sphere gives us that impression of this artificial reality, artificial intelligence, you know, VR. So he's saying on Earth, in your everyday regular life, you can be locking yourself into the eighth sphere and, you know, going along in this process. And we've seen it. That's when the technology really takes over. And it's interesting to me because Steiner's working in a, you know, 1920s, like, the technology is pretty perfunctory. I mean, it's just getting there. So he's obviously seeing deep into the era that we're in here. And, you know, I'm someone, of course, who's very pro-technology. And, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I edited a tech magazine for a decade. And that kind of impulse to me is very, you know, I think there's an incredible possibility for human transformation through good uses of technology. However, it does not appear to me, when I look at, you know, and here I'm going to sound like I'm preaching, but the younger generation and the way that they use the technology, it's gotten into them in a sense where it seems to be able to tell them who they are and what to do. And also seems to kind of feed into their fantasies, all the while sucking up their data, their money and their future, and making them good candidates for the eighth sphere. So I think something, some awareness needs to set in the society for us to move into a different place. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Twilight Mist, OMG, a doppelganger is a progressed saved option, like what you would find in the middle of a video game level before you've completed that level of the game. So is a doppelganger just a spiritual etheric clone that eventually, under certain circumstances maybe, becomes a full living double or stand-in for the original?
Well, it's interesting because if more and more just like in the Gurdjieff work, the whole goal is not to be sleeping through your life. It's because there's a certain automation that takes place on the material plane, and you can very automatically, you know, I think about friends that I've had who I won't name, who've gone in, you know, places like Columbia Law School or the different environments that they were in, and how they were, you know, they started off hoping, you know, figuring out this is my way to success or whatever. But what became obvious to me was they were becoming tools for this larger system, control system. And it's pretty interesting because my friends in particular, in that circle that they were in, you know, you would meet people like Supreme Court justices and all kinds of stuff. So it's a very high level of Ivy League connections into a very high level of international finance out of New York and all the rest of it. But I think what I observed the most is it took advantage of a younger person's fantasy of what it's like to climb that ladder. And the strategy of success really, there were no ethics attached to it. You know, the strategy of success was to be above whoever you were competing with. And, you know, the drive maybe is something to be admired, but you can see the doppelganger active in those types of situations. So I've gotten glimpses in situations with people around that. And, you know, people can take an education or connections like that and use them for very good purposes. But I don't know. I guess that's what comes to mind for me. Yes.
About an hour ago, you were talking about location, and I want to get back to this because Twilight Mist asked this question. I've been saving it. So the body has specific elemental expressions and connected, quote, divas, which are connected with the geographical locations and reactive to them, depending on affinity or lack thereof. I immediately, when you were going off, was thinking about mass migration.
Oh, yeah.
And these people are programmed for a certain location and a certain location's energy and karma.
True.
They're of the earth, and they are mass migrating to new locations with completely different energetic patterns and bringing their energy there and their karma there.
Yes, exactly. And this is interesting because Steiner tries to point this out, which is that different geographies hold different possibilities for this doppelganger because of the different magnetic variations. And he takes it on Earth first. He takes it into space next. And I guess in the next episode that we do on the Guardian of the Threshold, we will tackle how it relates. It's like a cosmic mirror of Earth. So the reason is, just like he's saying about the Russian soil, it's coming in from a cosmic source. And we could instantly say, oh, it's meteorites or whatever. He's saying that whatever it is not materially visible. So just like the eighth sphere, we can't see it. You can't pull out a telescope and see the eighth sphere, but the thing is there. So someone with visionary clairvoyant vision can see it. So when they get on that level, they're aware of these various things. Just like when you have visionary clairvoyance, you can see the doppelganger. So the territory aspect, I think, is interesting because what he suggested was that these mystery groups were doing all this commerce and going back and forth between America and Europe in 700, 800 AD, way before Columbus. But he said the goal of what they were doing there was they weren't looking for gold. He's saying that what they were doing was they were studying the effect of the doppelganger, the double, on the Native American population here. And they were studying it in terms of psychological illnesses, and they were studying it in terms of physical illnesses. And that this was the nature of the process that took place for a couple hundred years. And behind the scenes, it was starting to get disturbing in Europe. And actually, through the Vatican, they got the whole process stopped of things coming over to America to do this because they were afraid of getting found out. So there's a whole thing in there about it. So certainly the geography was crucial. So by the time they rolled out the 1492 Discovery of America, they had enough background on this doppelganger thing to think, okay, we know how to play this. And again, you have good and bad sides playing off against this. But the thing is, the nature somehow of the American part is fascinating, because it almost seems at times like Steiner is warning about it, you know? And that is interesting, because it also seems at times that he's praising it. So apparently there's some possibilities here with the incredible energy of America for, you know, obviously leading the world and everything. But the doppelganger of America apparently is very dangerous. Yes.
Ray Story, could the internet be a portal to the eighth sphere? In Happy Hermit 3D, Ahriman is the soul of the despair at the heart of narcissism. Narcissists lose connection. Our sense of connection is soul, perhaps.
Yeah. The first off, yes, the internet can be, especially for someone younger who doesn't have particular safeguards in place. I've also seen, for older people who aren't aware of the technology, I've seen them victimized by it. So that's a different kind of a thing. But, you know, so there's all kinds of levels of how this affects people. But certainly, I think if the awareness, you have the awareness going in, then that's the thing that saves you, because, you know, it's like having a shield, as it were. And again, Steiner's process is not to go off the grid and, you know, forget about technology. He actually talks about engaging the technology. I mean, there's probably a way that he would have appreciated going off the grid, but he's not saying, you know, run from the hills from Ahriman and all the technology and, you know, go back to being a agrarian society. But he is saying you can integrate the technology, but you have got to face off consciously against the Ahrimanic force. I'm going to read you something here that might give us a hint and lead us into the next episode as well, talking about that geography piece again, and also about the mystery schools. So we'll do this. We'll take your last question and we're out. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 173, Ahrimanic Doppelganger Mystery School, Steiner Secret Revealed. And, you know, as I said, this episode is really, it's adjunct to the Mesmer episode that we just did 2 weeks ago. And it'll be a connection to the Guardian of the Threshold episode. All three of those together really will give you a hint, a deeper hint of what the Steiner Mystery School work is all about. And, you know, hopefully it just heightens interest in everything that he put across. And, one of the things I do want to say is I think we have to understand Steiner on a different level than he's been brought out as generally. I think that if this is somebody who has somehow possessed the ability to go into the spiritual world, but also come back and in a very scholarly fashion relate these truths, and keep, you know, kind of vouchsafe this Easter egg for us for the 21st century. And there's no question, the more I've read into his work over the years, the more I can see, oh, it was all set up for, you know, these periods of time. And I'm sure people got a great deal out of it in that period, but I'm also, just like reading the Casey work, it is, there's an advanced curve of it that it almost seems to operate outside of time and space. All right, geography, ready? Mm-hmm. There are geographical concepts, of course, not concepts that pertain to a people. One only has to think of Emerson to know that nothing is intended here in terms of characteristics of a people. Emerson, however, was a person whose education was European through and through. Obviously, we're talking about two opposite poles that are developing. precisely under such influence as we have characterized today. People like Emerson develop by opposing the doppelganger with their full humanity. On the other hand, people like Woodrow Wilson develop, who are merely the outer shell for the doppelganger. Through them, the doppelganger acts particularly strongly, and they are essentially just embodiments of the American geographical nature. Now, I want to point out how strange mystery information can be, because Steiner has a lot to say about Woodrow Wilson that's not flattering. But Casey, who gave readings for him in the White House, said the Christ himself was there at Versailles with Woodrow Wilson at the table saying for the peace conferences, you know, don't punish Germany with these incredible, repayment structures and all the rest. And Casey was saying, you know, even though you don't regard Wilson as a particularly religious person, he's not known for that, but he is holding this, you know, incredible spirit. So this is the interesting thing that happens, which is not all of these mystics see things the same way. And we just kind of have to get used to it and find, I mean, they do have, you know, the majority of their points do converge. And yet, once in a while.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you and say, I mean, Jesus himself said Pilate would not have had the power if God hadn't given it to him, right?
True. Very
so,
true.
You know, Wilson was in that position at that time for a reason.
No question. Mm-hmm. No question. And, you know, Wilson, of course, he had a stroke in office. I mean, things had happened to him there. It's pretty interesting, but I find the Casey-Steiner crossover there because there's a number of things they agree upon. For example, the fact that John the Baptist had a reincarnation as Raphael, the incredible painter and artist. And, you know, there's a number of these things where their information around Atlantis converges. However, when you get into this, they can get into kind of maybe a personal opinion. And Steiner goes on to say, look, this has nothing to do with partisanship or anything like that. I'm not saying like I don't like Democrats in America or something like that. I'm trying to give you a deeper understanding as a human being. And so he says, spiritual science alone will enable real historical understanding. But as you can see, prejudice upon prejudice will naturally arise against it. For how could one think otherwise than that knowledge will also become partisan? That is one of the reasons, which are actually reasons of cowardice, why certain occult brotherhoods have held things back. They held back for the simple reason that these insights are frequently uncomfortable for people who do not want to become universally human. This applies especially to those who have the inclination to unite themselves with what streams out geographically, the doppelganger. If you think back to what I indicated to you in this context, you realize that there are numerous ways of making use of the streams that come from the spiritual world in order to cause harm here on the physical earth during this fifth post-Atlantean period. There are a whole host of opportunities for that, one of which I pointed out to you today. I also said that it was necessary to stress that such knowledge needs to be taken into the consciousness of a number of people, as that is part of the fundamental character of our age. So to kind of sum that up, what he's basically saying is this bit about the doppelganger, the deeper understanding of it, the mystery schools should have let this out. And here he is maybe taking a chance in 1917, bringing it forward. And he's saying it's cowardice is the reason that they won't bring it out because they feel like it would be misused. But he's saying it's essential. And he obviously believed that. However, I will say that after 1917, no more doppelganger. So I think it is operating on this very high, high secret place and with very good reason. But nonetheless, Steiner's kind of banging the table saying we need to let that out in order to get a handle on it. And it's crucial information and can't be left off the table. And with that, Miss Olivia, your last question.
I'm going to have a comment on this one.
Okay.
Wally Tango Foxtrot said, Wilson in his neurosyphilitic dementia facilitated the Federal Reserve. His wife ran things. The parallels with Biden are uncanny, speaking of doubles.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he did. He regretted that. He said that he had led the country down the the wrong path by allowing the formation of the Federal Reserve. At the end, he said that. And he's a mixed bag. You can't say with Wilson that everything he did was bad, because obviously trying to get a League of Nations idea, although it was misused and turned into this ridiculous UN thing, what he was trying to do was build a family of nations so that they would end wars. And so he had a kind of idealism to him. The problem, I think, is he ran off the rails because of who was around him and the JP Morgans and stuff. They could, you know, with the press of a button, just a few years before he got into office, they had these incredible runs on the bank and everything else because we didn't have a Federal Reserve, and they used this and they said, you know, you're going to need a central bank in order to handle these situations. So, you know, a lot of these presidents found themselves caught up in that. But,
you know, every president could be a chump.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the problem. They can be naive. They can
believe lies. He's a World War I president. And so he's right in the heart of that. But, you know, I think Casey working with him, he would have a better kind of lens on him than Steiner would, just for that fact alone. But at times, you know, it is interesting to view how they look at world events. What is fascinating to me is that Steiner is realizing, oh, the First World War is an incredible defeat for humanity, that this was allowed to happen, even with all this stuff pushing forward, you know, theosophy coming out, his invention of anthroposophy, this raising of the consciousness didn't go far enough. And he's saying and predicting there in the early 20s, in 100 years, it's going to have that opportunity again. And in a sense, here we are faced off against a potential, another world war. And yet, the possibility of this wave of mystery school knowledge through anthroposophy and other sources opens the door again. And he's saying, you know, that door will be open again in 100 years, and here we are. And certainly you can see, you know, the inclinations are there, as a matter of fact. And with that, Miss Olivia, that is how we're going to wrap up our show tonight.
Okay, I'm going to share this comment. Mm-hmm. Amber O'Neill TV said, this has been such a freaking amazing episode. And a lot of people were echoing that in the ideas room.
It's a deep subject, and I think we've opened up a very significant part of that conversation tonight. I'm going to open it up some more with the Guardian of the Threshold doppelganger piece, and we'll have that show sometime in July. Yes, okay. Miss Olivia, go for it.
I have a bunch of super chatters to thank. Eurythmy is fun. Melody Lenz, High Speed Chase, Erica Swenson Elliott, Safe and Effective, Philip K. Dick Film Festival, Brian Storm, Rob Harrison, Jay Parsons, Joseph Fabry, Roosevelt Media, Jessica Rodriguez, C.A. Bepper-Forden, Colonel Forbin, Thomas Ball, Slow Time, Kevin Bauman, Terry Doherty, Channeling the Heart, Barbara Joyce, Vern Baumgartner, Vincent Tomlinson, Short Order Cook 1, Infinitum Neo, and Robert Scott. Thank you so much for your generous Super Chats.
Wow, fantastic. We appreciate your support, and to all our subscribers, it makes a huge difference when you get behind us and the work that we're doing here, and it helps to kind of back up everything that we're doing and putting it all on the line to bring you these reports. I'll close with a Steiner quote on the doppelganger, and then I'll do some shout-outs, and we're done.
Okay.
A man will begin to feel as if something was accompanying him, something that thinks and hears with him and even speaks with him. If he's inwardly weak, or she's inwardly weak, it's a second ego that emerges, a doppelganger, that one is placed outside of one. The more seriously someone treads the esoteric path, the more of his old self he places outside him. That is, he sheds one skin after another, like a snake. These skins become like a second body, a doppelganger who never leaves one again for the rest of one's life. In the old Egyptian mysteries, someone who had placed his double outside him was called a ka man. The double is chained to the Ka man to constantly remind him what he was or still is. That's not always a pleasant feeling, but the awareness that he always has his double with him will remind him of his defects and that he should improve himself. He should constantly feel this presence. Otherwise, things could get dangerous. And because of his many high ideals and intentions, he would forget what his inner life and defects are. Under certain circumstances, it could even endanger a high initiate's life if, in spite of his striving, he would forget this double even for a moment. He could actually lose his physical body through death, somewhat like one who's concentrating on a sublime problem, forgets to pay attention to traffic, and gets run over. The more the double appears, the better it is for our development, for otherwise we would be living under great delusions about ourselves, for we can't see the progress we've made. Only our teacher can. Let's recall the place in the story in creation where the Elohim had attended to the sun and they created man. It was only there that they could judge their work. And the Elohim saw everything that they had made, and behold, it was very good. They had attained perfection. That's why they could judge their work. And take that as you will, as the close for that, the doppelganger serving a purpose as much as it held a danger as well. This is probably the most important lesson out of that. And a couple of quick images here that I didn't get to. Of course, Steiner's sculpture of Ahriman, which when he was sculpting it, he started to feel like he was walking in concrete. Ahriman forces aiming at the head of an individual, because the head is the realm that Ahriman seeks to control. The eighth sphere, as depicted in the early tarot. Important little esoteric secret left along the way.
That's the Tarochi deck, right?
That's it, yes. Montagna Tarochi. Absolutely fascinating deck. And what else here? Oh, yes. Steiner sculpting Ahriman, Lucifer, and Christ at the business in the Gertianum of doing it in 1921, just a few years before his own death. And quite a good sculptor he was. And finally, of course, Madame Blavatsky, who brought the doppelganger through on the esoteric information line for Steiner and others to work with. And finally, Alcott and Blavatsky. And of course, they met up at the Eddy House, which were basically doing what the Fox sisters were doing, opening up to this kind of spiritual theater from beyond. And with that, we'll do some shout outs here, but an incredible group that they are, and we continue to be inspired by all of them. And Najat says it's a wild subject that humanity needs to figure out. Well, I couldn't agree more. That is for sure. Let's see, who have we got here? Joe Gallo, Caritas Tarot. Nothing as it seems. Oh, that's true. Dow Jones Miller. Awesome picks. Thank you. Yeah, some of those are quite remarkable. And some of the ways that the individuals glow through the photographs, I think, very inspirational. Roosevelt, it's great to see you, sir. Great show as always, DJ and Olivia. Thank you very much. Olivia, bravo. Excellent.
Thank you.
And excellent questions via the Ideas Room, of course.
Yeah, and can we invite everyone who had
a doppelganger story
to include it in the comments?
Yeah. Absolutely. Brenda Fisher, Short Order Cook. I'm Not Dead Yet. That's a great one. Golden Girl, Griffin Eagle, The Dog with a Bone, Looking at Its Reflection. Exactly. Sure. They look like a scary couple. Oh, yeah. In the woods. What is that? I missed part of that conversation.
Blavatsky and Olka.
Oh. That is
like
for
a survivalist
sure.
Couple.
DJ for President, baby. There we go. I'm right with you. Much love to both of you. Fern, Thomas Ball, Nina says, Golden Girl. Travel in Riverside, Blues Johnson. Hello, sir. Happy Hermit, Major Arcana, Farms, a map of the development of early life. Indeed. Isn't that interesting? I would agree with that. It's a great discussion, DJ. Thank you. And Olivia, for all that you do to make Fridays happen. Much love and favor be upon you both. Thank you very much. Twilight Mist. That's it. Copernicus, a really good show indeed. Wayne Peaks, Wally, Scarlet Fire, DJ for president. Will you be tested? Absolutely. I'm not my doppelganger, says DD. I think that that's true. Alcott looks like Jim Mars. Yeah, I guess he kind of... He is a very interesting figure as well. What was he doing in the middle of all this? His stories about the weird kind of manifestations of beings popping in and out when Blavatsky was around are some of the best stories in old diary leaves. Just an excellent series of books. I do not let my doppelganger use my social media. Indeed, that's probably very smart. Sam H., Nunu, Terry Doherty, Tim Houston, Merry Solstice, everyone. I like it. That's right. Let's not us forget. Yesterday was summer solstice, right into today. We will see you all next week and some very exciting shows coming up for you. And we'll have more to tell you. Of course, there may be some special reports and other things as well, and some interesting interviews coming up for you this summer. So never let it be forgot. Once there was
Camelot.
Camelot, indeed. And there could be again. You know, it says and broadcast, but after all, it never really ends. Thank you very much, everyone. And we'll see you all. Have a fantastic weekend.
God bless everybody.